If the Senate will please come back to order. Folks, what we'll do is we'll do the messages from House, concurrence report on the budget. We'll go to general file, then we'll come back out and do concurrences, committee reports, and enrolled acts afterwards. So, first item of business is messages from the House.
March 2nd, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading passed, Mr. President. The bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 47, City Engineers' Duty to Estimate Project Cost. Ayes 58, excuse 2. Senate File 100, Prescription Drug Monitoring Program Amendments. Ayes 56, excuse, noes 2, excuse 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. From the House of Representatives, message number 438, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 95, Speed Limits. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 52, noes 6, excuse 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 440, concurrence requested, Mr. President. Senate file 124, sales and use tax enforcement. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 48, noes 10, excuse 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 441, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 133, Bighorn Sheep Relocation. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 41, noes 17, excuse 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 442, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 134, Bighorn Sheep Plan. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 55, noes 3, excuse 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 443, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 11, selling to junk dealers ID required. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 47, noes 11, excuse 2. Message number 444, concurrence requested, Mr. President. Senate file 130, Lottery Commission Reporting Requirements. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excuse 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. You want any of these back?
Senator Ross, are you ready on the conference committee report on Senate File 1?
I am, Mr. President.
Will the reading clerk please read in the conference committee report?
Senate File 1, Joint Conference Committee Number 1, signing for the House, Representative Harshman, Geer, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signing for the Senate, Senators Ross, Burns, Hastert, Perkins, and Wasserberger.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Joint Conference Committee report in reference to Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations. Ask the body to vote aye. Members of the Senate, you have received a number of different documents that are been handed out that will assist you in knowing what your Joint Conference Committee's actions have been with regard to the budget. Overall, for the new members, and I don't see one of the new members here, but hopefully he's hearing me, and that is that, folks, while most of us here in the Senate recognize that when you get to the Conference Committee on the budget, you don't get to amend this thing. Now, you could vote to not approve the Conference Committee report, but if you do that, you are sending this back to a free committee, and by so doing, everything's on the table. And for those of us that were here in 99, we know what that's like, particularly if you were in the House, and we got seriously hammered by the Senate with regards to the budget. So just a word of caution there on what we're about to do here. The first thing you're going to see on your desk is what is called the white rod. Now, normally you will see, as we go through the session, you'll see what we always call the golden rod. The reason it's white right now is because until we adopt this Joint Conference Committee report and have concurred on the budget, it's white, but it will come out tomorrow, Lord willing, with your approval. You'll see a golden rod. So, on that, on the fiscal profile, you will see that the status of your Joint Conference Committee report with regard to funds available and traditional funds still available for appropriation, there is $590,371 still in available in which would be column one, tranche one of the tranche sheet, the colored sheet that we'll reference here in a moment. If you were to go over to page two, you would see all the bills with appropriations on it and a corresponding number of $590,000 still total funds available. And then you'll see some footnotes, and these are important. The JAC appropriated $112 million plus or minus for fiscal 2015 contingent revenues and $165.9 for fiscal year 2016 revenues, should these investments from the PMTF and meet the spending policy amount for each year. You will note then that the House was above us and above the Senate with regards to the funds that are in Tranche 2 and Tranche 3. All of these physicians recommend that if we have excess revenues unappropriated remaining in the BRA account, the budget reserve account, as of 2016, in excess of the statutory reserve will go to the SIPA first, and then anything above in excess of the statutory reserve account would then go above the 75, would go to the LISRA account. You will see that the budget reserve account stays, as it always has been, at $109 million. The legislative stabilization reserve account is still at 1.8. We've intercepted all those funds to balance this budget. And you'll see that SIPA is at zero. And that's why you'll see the first tips go to SIPA. The other thing that I would tell you is that on page 5, the school foundation program still has $100 million in it. The next document that you have, of course, is the colored sheet, which has the categories of the tranches. So the first column, as usual, is what we have available to us right now. And you'll, and then you'll see the second column is contingent spending for 2015, and the third column being contingent funding for 2016. You'll once again see the corresponding numbers at the bottom, $590,373 still in the available traditional funds available for appropriation. And then, of course, in tranche 2, $3.2 million, and in tranche 3, $10.6 million. The items in yellow on that sheet are the actions taken by your Joint Appropriations Conference Committee. The next sheet that you have is a it has a number of columns, but it is the 2016 projected distributions to your cities, towns, and counties. You'll see the first column, of course, is census population. The second is 2014 fiscal year 16 distribution. That's from the last year's budget. Then you see the additional distributions, and the last column is direct distributions. You'll recall that the House had $10 million in for local government, cities, towns, and counties. The House had six. We will explain this further as we go along, but the compromise is that we ended up at eight. And the bulk of those funds came from AML monies that had been unexpended from the Wildlife Natural Resource Trust Fund, and then some other swaps to make that occur. And we'll explain that in, later. The next sheet that you have is two-sided. It shows you, the first page is a budget bill funding sources, where the appropriated dollars were derived. Once again, you'll see as we've been on the first column, the left-hand column shows you the reversions that we intercepted, the SIPA money that we intercepted, the 2014 reversions, the Craig estimates that would have swept to the LSRA that we intercepted, and of course there's the $222 million hole that we had to fill first. The bottom, you'll see that we also came up with additional monies from different other sources. We have, there was a $2 million in employee compensation, merit comp, that hadn't been utilized. We intercepted that. There was $3 million plus dollars in federal mineral royalty grant programs that had not been used. We intercepted that. We found that there was $9 million from the Buffalo Dam funds that we could intercept, and then some AML monies that we used ultimately to budget this make things work in this budget. Then, of course, you see the 2015 and 2016 contingent appropriations. On the back side of that sheet, you'll see the Joint Conference Committee. It's a revenue illustration to show you how we got to cities, towns, and counties and the monies. You'll see that there is AML reversion that we took from the Wildlife Natural Resource Trust Fund of $5.8 million that would have reverted. We then sent swapped money with the engineering building, about $3.4 million, and Gillette Madison. So Gillette Madison is completely taken care of now, off the board, and that freed up some money in tranche one also. And then we, in order to make this work, we still were light with regards to getting to $8 million. So we moved the State Building Commission contingency flex from 2015 to 2016. And so you end up with local governments getting $8 million, and the process that by which they get that is the Senate formula. Okay? The next sheet, I think that's the last sheet that you have available to you. The other thing you would have then, of course, is your summary sheet.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
President, before we get to that, can we ask questions about the white rod? Would that be appropriate?
Sure.
Mr. President, I want to be sure that we track SIPA and have it carefully understood by members of the body. If you look at page 3 of your white rod, the 14 budget we did for 15 and 16 showed $135 million in there on the bottom of page 3. And, of course, out of that, 28 went to the budget we had that we did in 14. $20 million went to the school facilities construction account, $40 million to the school, the SFP reserve account, and that's the $40 million I want to be sure of, Mr. President. And when you look at our tranche 2, it says FY215 SIPA, not including health facilities, $40 million. And I just want to be sure that the body understands that $40 million there is in that account, and this is an additional amount of money.
Senator Ross?
That is correct, Mr. President. So then the last sheet that you have, of course, is the summary sheet. It's 5 pages long. And your Senate Appropriations Committee has divided each page up, and we'll each take one. The first page, of course, is identical amendments, and the way in which you can tell on the far left is the Joint Conference Committee action. And you'll see, like on the first one, where we adopted a House amendment, but there was an identical amendment, second reading amendment number 19, and so we adopted the House, but we didn't adopt the Senate. So when you see the line out, those are the ones that were not accepted. The ones that are adopted, of course, are not lined out. The other thing I would tell you is that in your description portion, when we either delete or adopt and further amend the language that describes that further amendment, it's in italics. I mean, it's not the same stylized writing, the block writing. It's actually a italicized. And then the next 4 pages are non-identical amendments, and they go by order of agency and program. And so with that, if there's not any questions at this point in time, I would yield the floor to Senator Hastert to describe the actions of your Joint Conference Committee for page 1.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. As already stated there, you'll see that the stricken amendments, either House or Senate, we deleted and adopted. The other ones, there is several places where, and these are the identicals to enough to either they're absolutely identical or enough to that they ended up in the exact same spot. And in some cases, one chamber or another took 2 tries to get to the same place. So the cleaner way was to adopt the chamber that did it right the first time, and most of the time, of course, that was the Senate. But you'll see on the first one here is we adopted House Senate H2007A and Municipal Solid Waste Cease and Transfer Loan and Grant Program, and it removes the language that refers to the 2014 SF-43, which describes a project list that will be obsolete with the passage of Senate File 25, the Cease and Transfer Priority List. And then we adopted House H2020, which is the expanded foreign trade efforts, and it's $35,000 general fund to the governor's office for foreign trade expansions. And we adopted Senate S3006, the University of Wyoming, at deletes footnote 15, which directed the university to study the feasibility of creating the four-year degree program in Jackson. And then you can see where we adopted on the next line, Senate 3008, and deleted the other two House amendments, and that was Education School Finance School Foundation Program. And this adds $5,948,608 for external cost adjustment to the school funding model, which matches governor's recs, and adds update funding to for model variations. And just a reminder, S5 funding means the school foundation program account within the special revenue fund. That's what the S5 gets to you. And then the next line is the S2014, and that's the, again, Education School Finance School Foundation Program. Adds footnote 5, which specifies payment deadlines for the department to reimburse districts for Wyoming students attending out-of-state schools. Next, we adopted House 2041, the Women's Center. This requires the report regarding utilization of the Mother-Child Program in the Women's Center. And next we have House 2043, which is the contingent appropriations in Section 345. It reduces $5 million from the University of Wyoming unconventional oil and gas research appropriation, which then leaves $15 million, to a new line item for community college endowment matching funds in Section 346. So it reduces the community college STEM appropriation by $5 million, which leaves $5 million, and then it creates the new line item for UW for unconventional oil and gas research. Next, we have House 3022, Wyoming Value Added Energy and Industrial Plan, and it adds language to expand the use of appropriated funds for demonstration projects to develop beneficial use of carbon dioxide. The next series of amendments were technical corrections, and there you can see the Senate did a great job. Our chairman pretty much put all those in there. We had the delete obsolete references in the appropriations table, and then clarifies the language in footnote number 20B to indicate funds in this appropriation would be reduced dollar for dollar if House Bill 58 is enacted. Then we reduce obsolete reference to the appropriations table in two more spots, corrects the title of Northwest Community College, and then the adds reference language to Section 4 indicating 2014 session laws. Chapter 26 is being amended, clarifies language for the filing of AML grant applications, and then correct statutory reference in that whole section there. Then the final one on the first page, we adopted the Senate and modifies the language in Section 347 to clarify the requirement of an appraisal of properties being considered for sale, and removes the legislature from authorizing authorization process, leaving it to the state, the SLIB, I think it was, on that. So that's page one, and if you have questions, we'll try and answer them.
Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. President. So now, if there's no questions, just so you know, folks, though, on page one, the ECA is the governor's rec. We met the governor's rec with regards to the ECA. The other thing that I would point out is that the swap between tranche two and tranche three with regards to the unconventional oil and the community colleges, the money is there. It's just we took five from one and moved it over into 2015 and vice versa. So that money is still there if the money does arrive. Over to page two. Now we start the non-identical amendments, and I will handle page two. The first amendment that we adopted was the Senate amendment, was the Perkins Amendment, S312, added footnote 7, which directs the military department to work with the federal government to secure access to Evansville via the Veterans Cemetery Bridge. There'll be further discussion about what we did later in terms of what we did with the whole Evansville bridge issue. We deleted the House amendment with regards to the Miners Hospital. That's House 30. Geez, my eyes are getting so bad anymore. 3027. That was an advertising footnote. Basically, they can do that anyway. And so we deleted that House amendment. We adopted the House Amendment 3010, which is the Geological Survey, the Miller Amendment that added a footnote 1 for the agency to study processes and procedures for recording mineral exploration data and major mineral producing in major mineral producing jurisdictions, and also adds a report. The next row is we adopted the House Amendment 20-24, and then we further amended it. This, if you recall, members of the Senate, dealt with this issue of the language between footnote 8 and footnote 10. And basically, there was debate about moving footnote 8 out. What we did to make it clear was that we removed the last sentence, and that's where you see in the italicized language, JCC, that's Joint Conference Committee, deleted and further amended it to retain footnote 8, but remove the sentence that limited the plan's emphasis to highways 59 and 2026. So those two footnotes are now consistent. We next row, we deleted the Senate Amendment 3002. That was the Von Flatern Amendment, which required public meetings with regards to Highway 59 and 2026. The next row, we deleted a House amendment, but then we adopted Senate amendment. And this is regarding the House had taken for the aging division in the Department of Health $200,000 from general fund. The Senate had $200,000, but we took it right out of the director's budget. We accepted the Senate's position. It moved $200,000 from the general fund to the director's office for the aging division for purpose of providing additional funding to the home services program, and adds a footnote. The next row is House Amendment 2003. We deleted and further amended. This pertains to the nursing home rebasing. And if you recall, the House was at was at 100%. The Senate, when it left here, we were at 75%. The halfway mark would have been 87.5%. The Senate was pretty staunch in trying to maintain our position. So the ultimate resolution is that we're at 85.5%. And that means that the total nursing home rebasing with federal funds and general funds is $8,164,886. $4,082,443 is general fund, and a like amount is federal fund. That's 85.5%. We deleted, the way we got this money was we deleted the $694,000, and then further amended to limit the increase for nursing home rebasing to funds appropriated in House Bill 58. If it died, House Bill 58 died, so we took, that's where we got it. It was basically $500,000 general fund, $500,000 federal funds, and remember that there's also a study that will be coming. Next column is delete and further amend, which was House Amendment 20-14, modifies footnote 20, so that the supplemental appropriation to adult developmental disabilities be expended based upon individual service ratings. We went further and amended, and you'll see the italicized language. We deleted and further amended the language to add to footnote 20 so that the supplemental appropriation for developmental disabilities be expended in the comprehensive and support waivers based upon individual service ratings of clients of 4.0 or higher beginning July 1, 2015. So what we're trying to do there is make sure that the most needy and those that need the most services get the money. You may recall there's a scale of 1 to 6, and I guess you can even go even higher, maybe even 7 or 8. But so those 4 or above, that's where the money's directed. The next row, we deleted a couple of House amendments and then adopted the Senate amendment, so that it modifies footnote 13. Recall there was great furor over footnote 13 and whether or not there was double dipping or whatever. The language that was the best was the Senate's. It was my amendment, actually. Or, well, I shouldn't claim it all, because it was your entire Senate Appropriations Committee, that amendment. And that amendment was adopted, so that we prevent potentially any double dipping with regards to Medicaid. And that was a compromise worked out by WAMSAC and by the governor's office, your appropriations committee, and the department. The next, we deleted the House amendment regarding forestry, and we adopted the Driscoll amendment, which basically extends for 6 more months the funds for pine bark beetle mitigation. The next thing that we did was with regard to Senate Amendment 20-11, we deleted and further amended. This is one-time funding. This regards is in regards to the fiscal management program. The Senate had simply $1 million in there and no match. The House had $1 million in there and a $3 million match. Well, the Senate took out that $3 million match. It was simply not feasible. There was some miscommunication as it was presented by the University of Wyoming. However, they do believe that they've got $750,000. And so you'll see that there is a requirement of a match of $750,000 in additional language to allow the university to satisfy the match through in-kind contributions or any other revenue source. The last column or row is regarding the aircraft, the state research aircraft, and other airplanes. We adopted the Von Fledern Bebout Amendment and deleted the House Amendment, so the language of the Senate stays in there. So any questions on page 2? Hearing none, we'll now go to page 3, and Senator Wasserberger will handle page 3, and I yield to him, Mr. President.
Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you to my good friend from Laramie County. I'm glad I got promoted to being a senator, so I appreciate that. So on page 3, essentially what we did, the very first, at the top, the very first box you see, we deleted the Senate amendment and we adopted the House amendment, which was third reading amendment number 33, which essentially says almost the same thing as the Senate amendment, which was we're going to have a study based on the Hathaway program to include advanced placement, international baccalaureate courses, dual and concurrent enrollment, and weighted grade point average. So that was the first thing. Next box down, we deleted the Senate amendment, which was third reading amendment number 14. essentially because I believe House Bill 23 was actually passed. The next box down, we get to Section 3, Capital Construction. And this is actually a very easy amendment. We adopted the Senate amendment, second reading number 16. And from that, we took the money from general fund, which was $240,000 for the Jackson Outreach Center, and we put that into tranche two, okay? And if you pick up your tranches worksheet, okay, if you look at the second column, you'll see that it is added in there at number 14. It's 14 priority for the Outreach Center in Jackson. The next one, the next big box, probably the most complicated and actually the last thing that we did, essentially it was for cities, towns, and counties, and the House on third reading amendment number 6, they wanted to get that funding from the Integrated Test Center and the Senate. Essentially, we struck ours, but we used a lot of our language. And if you remember, the Senate's position was $6 million, and the House's was $10 million. And so this is what we did, and I'll show you how that works on your paperwork that you have. But essentially, it provides $10 million for distribution to cities, towns, and counties at a 60-40 split. And they wanted $5,000 and $10,000, and there is no hardship calculation or consensus distribution. So if you see priority number 2, $2.4 million for the Gillette Madison Water Project, and priority 14, $830,000 for the University High Bay of the Tranche 2015 funds for AML funding, and that swapped that, okay? And if you go down that paragraph a little bit, you'll see that essentially what we agreed to was $8 million with a 63% for cities, towns, and counties, or cities and towns, and 37% for counties using the Senate model, which was $5,000 for towns under 35 people and $18,000 to towns between 36 and 1,000 population. And the Joint Conference Committee funded the distribution with AML funds previously appropriated in the Wyoming Natural Resource Trust Fund, $5.8 million and $2.1 million from fiscal year 2015 contingency funds, which is tranche two, by moving the State Building Commission flex contingency to tranche three or fiscal year 2014. And JAC also provided for internal swapping of all AML funds within the budget. And so if you take out this form, it says House Bill 0001, JCC01 Revenue Illustration. It'll show you how that money works. We essentially took, as the chairman of appropriations said, we took the money from abandoned mine lands reversion from the Wyoming Natural Resource Trust Fund, and that was $5.8 million. We switched it with UW Engineering Building Swap with General Fund for $3.4 million, and Gillette Madison Swap with Tranche 2, and then Contingency for $2.4 million. And then the State Building Commission Contingency Flex was swapped with fiscal year 2015 to fiscal year 2016 Contingency Funds 2.1. So cities, towns, general fund money was 3.4, and in the last box, fiscal year 2015, which is tranche 2, 4.5 for a total of $8 million. And if you pick up this, which says at the very top, fiscal year 2016 projected additional direct distribution in 2015, SF1, JCC01, it shows you how the money goes to the counties and cities and towns. So if you look at, let's take Natrona. Natrona County receives $356,000, and Casper receives their population is 55,000. They receive $541,000. Okay. And then finally, the last box. Essentially what happened there, we deleted the Senate second reading amendment number 17 because it used general fund money, and we used the House version, which was second reading amendment number 26A, and then third reading amendment number 32, which used state land and investment board's money for $83,000, and then essentially that money reverts back June 30th, 2018. And then it also added $124,000 for the court security improvements in Weston County. I think that's page 3.
Okay. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next page is page 4 of your summary sheet. And I would yield to Senator Burns for an explanation of page 4.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on page 4, we're in the 300s, where, frankly, anything can happen. And in that, the first box, we're dealing with the Department of Health Facilities Task Force. And what the House did on second reading was set up $10,000 from general fund money to go to support the Health Facilities Task Force, but they also included $1.5 million for Level 1 and Level 2 studying for the Life Resource Center. In third reading amendment, they deleted the entire amendment. What the Senate did was the Senate put in the $10,000 for the task force, and we also accepted a House amendment that basically softened the language. The task force from the Senate amendment directed the task force to study alternative uses for the retirement center. The House language added the possibility of alternative uses. So we basically, between the two, ended up softening the language. Mr. President, there's a question from the Majority Floor Leader.
Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I want to be sure and understand, and I brought this up earlier about the SIPA account for the school facilities. If everything goes according to what this bill says, how much money will be in that account to move forward on our school institutional school facilities?
Senator Burns?
Mr. President, I can tell you in just a moment.
Senator, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Plus the 25, but I want to be sure that we have that right number.
35 plus 25, 60. 60 million.
Say that again.
35 million plus 25 million. 60.
60. Okay. Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. President. On the next box, we're dealing with the state buildings. And in the state buildings account, and this is the paintings, the Chief Washakie paintings, there was basically a mirror amendment for $156,000 on both the Senate side and the House side. But the difference, the reason they were not mirror amendments was on the House side, they also added language to allow ANI to accept gifts, transfers, grants, and bequests toward paying for that. We accepted the Senate amendment for the money for the purchase and the House amendment for the language allowing the gifts and bequests. And then going to the next box down, the House second reading amendment number 8, this dealt with the matching. We got rid of the matching requirement for the master's in counseling education for community colleges, increased the appropriation by $96,828 out of the 2015 contingency funds. That's Section 245 on your tranche sheet. second reading amendment number 22, that's Senate second reading amendment 22, was accepted, and that's the modifies the $1 million to UW for their retention and to include the appropriation for retention incentive payments in 2017 and 18 to the standard budget. And then Senate second reading amendment number 23 has to do with the, it's for the Central Wyoming College Ag and Animal Science Center. That's $325,000 out of 2015 contingency for the Level 2 planning for that new building. And, Mr. President, if there are any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
No questions. Back to Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so for the majority floor leader, of course, we do have money in Tranche 3 for those state facilities, another $25 million. So we would be up to $85 million at that point in time.
Majority floor leader.
Mr. President, I'm not sure that you'd be up to that amount. I think you would only have the 35 that's left after you take the 40 plus the 25 in the third tranche.
Excuse me, 80 million. It would be. Lord willing, and the creeks don't rise. Mr. President. If there's no further questions, I would then yield the floor to the Vice President for explanation of page 5.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. We've got on the first big block there, we did a number of things. These will both have to do with the Evansville Bridge and the Jacoby Golf Course. What we did is, as it's been alluded to earlier, what we did is deleted a series of House and Senate amendments regarding the Evansville Bridge. If you see we deleted the first two House amendments, which took care of the Evansville Bridge. Then we also deleted the Hicks-Driscoll Amendment, requiring that to go through the state water, because ultimately we subsequently then those weren't funded through the water folks. Then we went also deleted the Perkins and Perkins Amendment 2038, and also the Hicks Division 1, deleted those to take out all the Jacoby stuff. And what we did is we came back, and you'll see what we started to do with that. When you go down to the Hicks Division 2, we deleted and further amended Hicks Division 2. All we did is we deposited $1 million from the 2015 tranche with the State Loan Investment Board as a contingent funding list to purchase easements or property for resident access to Evansville. And this goes along with the footnote regarding there's that Evansville Bridge that goes, or that bridge that goes over the cemetery, to make sure that as we work with our federal partners, the VA and others, that if it's necessary to have that money to purchase that easements and those things back from the department, so that we can have the use of that bridge and move that over. But that's deposit to the State Lands and Investment Board, and they'll only do it in the event the Miller Department can arrange for that, and if indeed it's necessary, and if it's a reasonable agreement. The State Loan Investment Board will authorize that. Then the other thing we did with we also on the Hicks deleted and further amend the Hicks Division 3 to Third Reading Amendment Number 11. We moved the Jacoby Golf Course, and we further amended that, and that was expanded, Mr. President, to provide for a development implementation of a university-wide irrigation system independent of the City of Laramie potable water system. The university is authorized and directed to pursue future funds for this project through the Wyoming Water Development Commission. So what we did is, at the end of the day, there were $2.6 million out of the $3.8 million that was originally requested in total for Jacoby is now goes to provide for the university-wide system independent of to make the entire all the irrigation on the university's campus independent, and some of that will obviously probably include Jacoby, but nevertheless it's now expanded so it's the entire campus, and also not quite but almost cut the Jacoby funds in half. Then we also And then also adopted the Hicks Division 4 and Hicks Division 24 to third reading, third reading amendment number 11, which then removed all the FY16 and FY16 for both Jacoby Golf Course and Evansville Bridge. We adopted the, I think it was the case amendment, second reading amendment 43 on contingent appropriations. This was to provide for, to allow funds for the disaster reserve account also to be spent for disaster contingency planning in addition to disaster response. That's not a lot of money. There's only $3 million in that total, but nevertheless, there is some of that planning flexibilities in there now. We also did check on if there are any disaster planning funds available. There is an account that holds those, and the amount in that account was zero. So with this, there is some flexibility out of the disaster religion, the contingent funds for some planning. Deleted and further amended the House Amendment 2039 and the Scott Amendment, Second Reading Amendment 30, and adopted both of those. The effect of that is that the department heads are restricted from enhancing salaries, but the governor can exempt those salaries. And so if the governor's office approves those salaries in order to keep people, the governor has the ability to exempt those salaries. So both of those are in there. The House has a little bit of buyer's remorse on this because the net effect, Mr. President, is any increases will likely be included in their standard budget. However, there will be a report back to the Joint Appropriations Committee on any of the moves that were made so that the Joint Appropriations Committee can monitor that. The Hicks Second Reading Amendment 31 on Sagegrass implementation went with the only difference between the House and the Senate versions of that are there's still going to be a report on captive sagegrass on introduction and production, like domestic production and release, but did delete the provisions on the to include both capture and transplant along with that. So there still will be a report back on raise and release. I also adopted the Hicks First Division to Third Reading Amendment 19 on community college fundings, which directs the JAC to review the community college funding model and determine whether it requires changes and requires a report. That stayed in. You see the other two were deleted, and that was we deleted the community college funding model for state appropriations. There was a portion of that House amendment that was deleted and adopted. That with that, there's this mere amendment that we divided and adopted half and cut off half. This was the other half of theirs on that mere amendment was deleted. And also out of the, we deleted the House amendment, which would include a legislative per diem increases in the budget bill, adhering to the longstanding and hard-fought decision that per diem and salary increases should always be in separate bills and not in the budget. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. President, that concludes our presentation of the Conference Committee report and would urge your favorable consideration and vote aye.
Further questions or discussion on the budget bill? Senator Scott?
Mr. President, first, I'd like to take exception to one remark by the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. Some of us depend on the cricks rising. Don't go asking them not to. Mr. President, in all seriousness, I'm going to vote no, not because I'm objecting to any specific thing in the conference report, but continuation. I voted no on the budget as a whole because I think the capital expenditures are excessive in this, given where we are and are taking too much flexibility away from us in the future. I think maybe we should have cut them back by a third, including the expenditure for redoing this building. But I think we're constraining ourselves too much in the future, and that will send us into our reserves quicker than we should. And that's why, Mr. President, I'm voting no. It's not any specific objection to this conference committee report.
Further discussions? Comments? If not, the motion is that the Senate do adopt the Joint Conference Committee report. The motion before the Senate is that it do adopt the Joint Conference Committee report on House Bill 1 and Senate File 1, and you've been asked to vote aye. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard,
aye.
Bebout,
aye.
Burns,
aye.
Case,
no.
Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Kraft,
excused.
Dockstetter,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Escobel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
no.
Johnson,
aye.
Kinski,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Pappas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Scott,
no.
Von Fladern,
aye.
Wasserbrugger,
aye.
President Nicholas,
aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 25 aye. 4 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted the Joint Conference Committee report to Senate File 1 and House Bill 1. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that brings us to that order of business of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move the city resolve itself and committee of the whole to discuss bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senator Dockstetter.
Committee of the Whole will come to order. Just a moment. Committee of the Whole will come to order. First bill up for our consideration is House Bill 114. Reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 114, Wyoming Repeal Gun-Free Zones Act, sponsored by Representative Yagi. Okay. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, O2, Coe, and Pappas. No, Senator Dockstetter, Ruffa, Senator Cole, Chairman.
All right. You heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Coe.
Mr. Chairman, move on committee the whole rise and report to do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 114. Members of the Senate, I will move the standing committee amendment, which is in fact substitute bill number one, after I explain the bill. It's going to take a little while, but I'm going to try to keep it as short as I can. I think before walking through the substitute bill, which is the Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 114, I'd like to step back and review the existing law, the bill as it comes from the House, and the concept of a substitute bill. So under current Wyoming law, people can carry concealed if they are a peace officer, have a permit issued by Wyoming, have a permit issued by another state that recognizes Wyoming permits, or if they don't have a permit but aren't disqualified by being a felon, mentally incompetent, etc. That same law prohibits carrying concealed weapons in 11 different areas or instances, which from now on I'll refer to as zones. House Bill 114 takes five of these zones and says you can carry concealed if you have a Wyoming permit. Those are any meeting of a governmental entity, any meeting of the legislature, any public school or college or professional athletic event, any public elementary school or secondary school, and any public college or university facility. The committee amendment or the substitute bill took the same zones found in House Bill 114 and simply provides that instead of a blanket state mandate, I want to emphasize the word mandate, the zones will be addressed on a local level basis. The authorization to carry concealed would be decided by elected officials, except for the University of Wyoming. The Wyoming Constitution says that the legislature is to provide for management of UW by a board of trustees, which is appointed by the governor and confirmed by this body. That's Article 7, Section 17. The reasons to do are explained in the legislative findings which appear in the bill. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to walk through the bill, which in fact is a substitute bill. Starting with the catch title. The House version provides it is Wyoming Repeal Gun-Free Zones Act. The substitute bill provides for gun-free zone modifications. On that point, I note that the House version of the bill did not fully repeal gun-free zones. It only applied to five of the 11 zones. Six zones are unaffected by the House version. The same six zones are likewise not affected by the substitute bill. Now, those zones, those other zones out there, courtrooms, one, private property, third is churches, four, bars, five, jails, prison detention facilities, and six, law enforcement facilities. The House version does not provide that everyone who can carry concealed in Wyoming can carry concealed in the five zones it did affect. Under the House version, you have to have a Wyoming permit to carry concealed in those five zones. Persons who can carry concealed lawfully in Wyoming today without a permit are not authorized by the House version to carry concealed in those five zones. Same is true in the substitute bill. So the House version of the bill was not a complete repeal of the existing law on gun-free zones. This six of the 11 zones still existed. And even for those five affected by the original bill, it was not a complete repeal of the existing prohibition found in law. The catch title of the substitute bill recognizes that what is being done is to modify gun-free zones. Page 1, line 10. We're going to start on the bill. This starts the legislative findings, and I happen to think that this is one of the really, really important factors of the substitute bill. Normally, we don't include legislative findings. But if we want to explain why we are enacting the law or help the courts in interpreting the law, we have included legislative findings and statements of intent. Both of those apply here because I'm going to talk about case law and I'm talking about Supreme Court. Overall, we are trying to strike a balance between the right to defend oneself and the right to be governed by laws that maintain order. Page 1, line 12. We quote the Wyoming Constitution and acknowledge that the Constitution provides for a fundamental right to keep and bear arms. But a fundamental right is not an absolute right. And that has been recognized by the Wyoming Supreme Court in this very area. The court's finding is sound. It's cited in an 1890 law to support its holding. The substitute bill also references an 1876 territorial law which prohibited residents of city or town from carrying concealed and applied the same to travelers after being told by the restriction of law enforcement. The House version of House Bill 114 implicitly acknowledges that there is no absolute right to carry concealed. Six of the gun-free zones remain. You need a permit to carry concealed in the five zones that are affected. To get a permit, you have to pay money, provide fingerprints, submit an application, and swear under oath. Every one of these requirements is inconsistent with the notion that there is an absolute, undeniable right to carry concealed. People can interpret the Constitution as they like, but unless you want to reject the authority of the Supreme Court as a final arbiter of what the Constitution says, you cannot argue with this finding. To those who would reject the court's authority and say that the legislature of every man holds that authority, I would say that means rejection of our entire system of government, the system of checks and balances, so carefully crafted in the Constitution. Page 2, lines 8 through 12, this is the heart of what the substitute bill is trying to do. We are attempting to strike a balance. That's what the legislature attempts to do, find a proper balance that best works. Anyone who listened to the testimony on House Bill 114 would see that we have a citizenry divided on the issue. Compromise. Balance is needed. The bill calls special attention to schools. We have a duty to protect students in our schools. Certainly those schools provided by the state and local districts. The committee received testimony, for instance, from a student at Cheyenne High School. She took a poll asking simply, would you feel more safe or less safe if House Bill 114 was enacted into law? 102 of the 162 students she polled said less safe. Of the remaining 60, about half said more safe and about half had no opinion. If we go to page 3, lines 5 through 14. Here we address the Constitution provides for a right to carry a firearm in a person's own defense. But that does not mean the state has deputized everyone carrying concealed to act on behalf of the state. Article 1, Section 24 also speaks to the right to bear arms in defense of state. But you can't read provisions of the Constitution in isolation. The document must be read as a whole. The substitute bill points out that the Constitution does not call for everyone carrying a gun to act on his own to take out the bad guys. It expressly prohibits bringing in armed bodies to suppress violence, except upon application of the legislature. If we really believe that there is some imminent threat to arming school children, we should provide additional security in a systematic, meaningful manner and pay for it. We should not just hope that by happenstance, allowing concealed carry will somehow protect our children. On to page 3, line 16 through page 4, line 3. This addresses what we are trying to do with the substitute bill. We could carry on the current law and keep gun-free zones as is. We could adopt the House version and mandate that certain zones will be open to persons with a Wyoming permit, or we can strike a balance and allow for local elected officials to decide what is best for their particular circumstance. That's the road the substitute bill is taking. Page 4, lines 10 through 13. This is exactly the language of the House version with the addition of the phrase, be authorized. Be authorized to on line 12. Thus, just like the House version, this section only applies to those holding a concealed carry permit issued under Wyoming law. Go to page 4, lines 15 through page 5, line 13. Again, the five zones affected are the same as the House version. The difference is the substitute bill specifies who can authorize carrying concealed instead of the state mandating, I want to emphasize that, instead of the state mandating that Wyoming concealed carry permit holders can carry in those five zones. Page 5, lines 15 through 17. This limits authorization to those 21 or older. This is new in there. Persons 18 to 21 can, in fact, receive a permit under current law. Under certain circumstances, sheriff's authorization, Wyoming Statute 6-8-104J. But under the substitute bill, those permit holders would not be allowed to carry in the five zones we're talking about. Going out of page 5, lines 19 through page 6, line 3. This addresses the situation in which a college or the university houses a child care facility. It provides that the governing board cannot allow concealed carry if it determines that action would affect accreditation. Page 6, lines 5 through 16, here we get into the authority of the locals. We give them as much flexibility as possible. They can exercise their authority on a case-by-case, facility-by-facility, category of facility, or all property basis. The point is they know at the local level what is needed. The substitute bill allows that informed decision-making at the local level. Page 6, lines 16 through 18. The decision-making by the locals is in their sole discretion, and decisions under this section are not subject to appeal, no appeal. Staff has researched this issue, and case law supports the concept that appeals from administrative action can be limited by law. If someone wants to bring a court case claiming that the law denies them a constitutional right, they can. The Wyoming Constitution protects that ability. But this is saying that this law does not give you another way to get to court. Page 6, lines 18 through page 7, line 17. The local body can consider any local conditions it deems appropriate. The substitute bill lists some of those that we consider important and determine the balance. The list includes distance, the activity, costs, advanced training notification, and identification. Page 8, lines 1 through 10, these lines address how each governing body exercises the discretion to authorize concealed carry. It follows how each carries out their legislative function. The importance is this is where citizens have input to what their local bodies decide. Now we're going on to page 8, lines 12 through 19. This addresses notice. If the governing body allows concealed carry generally, then for meetings the public is told in writing or verbally whether or not concealed carry is permitted. For facilities, the governing body only has to post signs if concealed carry is permitted. If the prohibition remains in place, no signs are required. Moving on now to page 9, lines 1 through 14. Paragraph little I provides immunity for individual members for authorizing or not authorizing concealed carry under this section. This is the immunity section. This is personal protection. Is taken from current law providing for immunity for issuing or not issuing a permit, Wyoming Statute 6-8-104AA. Paragraph 2, little I, provides immunity for boards, commissions, etc., themselves, not the current law for issuing permits. Paragraph 3, little I, provides that a person is not acting on behalf of the state or other governmental entity and carrying a weapon under the authority of this section. So the individual is on his own if he shoots the wrong person, just as he would be under current law. Page 9, lines 16 through 22. Again, this is taken from the House version of the bill. Lines 18 and 19 allow the judge of a courtroom to decide who carries concealed in his or her courtroom. Lines 21 and 22 allow private property owners to maintain their rights to restrict firearms on private property. Moving on to page 10, lines 1 through page 12, line 3. What this does is defines who the governing body is for authorizing concealed carry under the earlier provisions of the bill. Generally, it's the county commissioners for counties, the city councils for cities. But if another entity has its own facilities or conducts its own meetings within a city or county, then that entity has the authority. Thus, a college community district board of trustees decides for college facilities, even though that college facility very well could be within a city and obviously within a county. On the state level, the substitute bill acknowledges the separation of powers and allows each branch to control its facilities and meetings. On a local level, for the substitute bill confers authority for schools to school district boards. Page 12, lines 5 through 11, this deals with special districts. If the special district has an elected board, fire board, hospital board, whatever that might be, that board controls its facilities and meetings. Page 12, lines 13 through 16, if a board or other entity is appointed, then the elected governing body appointing that board, like a joint powers board, or other entity can delegate to them the authority to carry concealed at their meeting. Again, the point is that the elected body decides what is best at the local level. They can delegate or choose not to. Moving on to page 12, lines 16 through 21. If a meeting is conducted in a facility for which the governing body has not allowed concealed carry, an entity holding a meeting in that facility cannot allow concealed carry in its meeting. On the other hand, just because open carry has been authorized in a facility does not mean a different governing body holding a meeting in that facility must authorize concealed carry in the meeting. Page 13, line 1 up to the effective date. These are conforming the new law to existing provisions. The important language here is found on line 7 and 8. Unless the person concealed is authorized to carry in one of the zones under the new law, and unless he is carrying in compliance with that authorization, he is subject to the existing penalties applicable to unlawful concealed carry. So with that, the first offense is $750 fine, 6 months in jail. The second offense is a felony. These are from existing law, and they are also the same penalties as the House version would have applied for carrying with a non-Wyoming permit in one of the five-gun zones. Three zones are for carrying with or without a permit in one of the other six zones, which are unaffected by the versions of the bill. Page 14, line 13, the effective date was changed from immediate to July 1st, 2015. There's a need for locals to consider the bill and determine what is best for their constituencies. So, members of the body, I would close by addressing three concerns I have heard regarding the substitute bill. This bill is contrary to the right to bear arms. I already addressed that right. It's not absolute under the Wyoming Constitution. As for the federal Constitution, I'm not a constitutional scholar or a real lawyer, but my understanding of the Second Amendment in the federal Constitution is that the United States Supreme Court in the Heller case decided the Second Amendment protects an individual right to bear arms in their own defense. At the same time, the majority opinion said nothing in the opinion should be taken to cast doubt on long-standing prohibitions on the possession of firearms in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings. The Heller case also took notice of the long-standing history of other courts to uphold state laws prohibiting concealed carry. Understand that later in the McDonald case, the U.S. Supreme Court held that the Second Amendment applies to states as well. Heller involved a District of Columbia law. The majority opinion quoted the language from Heller on lawful restrictions and reaffirmed Heller concerning regulations in sensitive places. It specifically said it repeated those assurances on lawful regulations. Going on to the House version of the bill, which recognizes that the right is not absolute. It leaves intact gun-free zones in 6 of the 11 areas. It requires a permit issued in Wyoming in the 5 areas it did affect. Contrary to what many of the emails we're receiving suggests, no bill before the legislature this year claims that the right to bear arms is absolute and cannot be restricted. You cannot make people pay, swear an oath, or take a class to exercise an inalienable absolute right. House Bill 114 had those requirements since the day it was filled. These are not changed in the substitute bill. Number two, I heard concerns voiced that this bill creates holes in regulating gun-free zones and makes the system too complex. First, House Bill 114, as introduced and as it came out of the House, unamended, kept some existing free zones and mandated that others would be open to Wyoming permit holders. It did not bring uniformity to the law. Six zones remain completely gun-free. Only Wyoming permit holders can carry in the five open zones. The policy choice the substitute bill makes is to allow local elected officials to decide where and how to apply the exceptions, rather than the state mandating this is how it will be in all specified places under all conditions. The bill provides for public input and notices. I have faith that the local officials know what they are doing, and that the people can read signs. Number three, also heard concerns that the substitute bill hijacks the original bill. I walked you through the bill line by line, noting the differences from the House version. Bottom line is the substitute bill closely follows the House version. Current law prohibits concealed carry in 11 zones. Both versions would change that and allow concealed carry for Wyoming permit holders in five of those zones, the same five in each bill. The House version would not allow any discretion in those five zones. The substitute bill provides that discretion to local elected officials rather than us telling everyone we know best in all circumstances now and in the future. The substitute bill does not go as far as the House version, but it proceeds in the same direction, allowing concealed carry in locations previously prohibited, but doing so on a more defined, better balanced basis. That's exactly what we do with bills. We amend them and refine them and make them work best as we can for all citizens of the state. With that, that concludes my presentation. The key word here, I think, is balance. And there's a number of case law decisions that I alluded to that talk about that balance. I'd ask that you support the bill.
Senator Coe, we need to have that amendment read in.
Read the amendment in. I'd move that.
Move it. Reader.
House Bill 114, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, that substitute number 1 be substituted for House Bill 114.
Question on the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
No.
Move it. I got to move it.
Oh. Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I think I have to move the amendment first.
Oh.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment, which is, in fact, substitute bill that I just covered.
Thank you.
And ask the body to vote aye.
All right. Now discussion. Senator. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I do agree with my esteemed colleague in from Cody in many ways. We looked over the court cases. I think in many cases that pulling up the LexisNexis, what's in the findings, you can get that in a relative short time in 5 or 10 minutes and go through the LexisNexis findings. And there's a lot of, I'd consider it word for word, drawing out of the court cases in the findings. Unnecessarily, perhaps there should have been quotation marks around them, but other than that, I think it's probably pretty close to it. I think the thing that we need to look at, ladies and gentlemen, is a couple of things. And let me read this, that even though police power is an attribute of sovereignty essential to civilized government and inherent in the legislative body, the means adopted for its exercise must be reasonable and designed to accomplish the end in view. And essentially, that's what we have to look at, ladies and gentlemen, is the end in view. And I think it's fairly well stated in the substitute bill in Romanet I. security for persons using the property. And that's what we're looking at, is security for persons using the property. Now let's look at the facts. And the facts are relatively straightforward on this. And one of the undeniable facts is that if you look at a study that was conducted by John Lott, that study went into in-depth detail of all of the mass shootings that we've had in this country over the last 20, 30 years. Every one of them. And there are a few common denominators in this. One, the minimum time that was taken in the planning of these mass murders was 6 months, up to 2.5 years. It's not a heat of passion event. It's people that are cold and calculated in wanting to do the most destruction of human life possible that they can when they decide that it's their time to have this event take place in their life. And so they want to do the most damage to human bodies any way they can. Now, how do they do that? Here's the other thing that they found in that study. And this is that they make a determination about where the gun-free zones are. It's not a random event. They plan for months or years. They find out where the guns aren't. Now, that's a logical thing to do if you're going to mass murderer and you want to cause as much death and destruction as possible. You go to where there's gun-free zones. Now, tell me, folks, does this bill advance the end of security for persons using the property? Does it really do it? Does this optional bill set out and say, we're going to do the best job we can as state legislators with our police power to protect the children of this state? That's the question that you have to ask yourself. Not a lot of other questions out there. That's the big one. Whether people live or die. And this is really up to this body right now. And that question is so important to the sponsors across the hall that a lot of them want to have their names removed off the sponsorship, because this bill is no longer what it was designed to be. And that was to make sure that we protected children in this state. Now, Mr. Chairman, I want everybody to take a look at this handout. You should have it on top of your desk. This one right here. It's a copy of our Constitution. And it says, laws to be passed by bill, alteration or amendment of bills. No law shall be passed except by bill. No bill shall be so altered or amended on its passage through either house as to change its original purpose. Now, folks, being unconstitutional is a high, high bar. If this was ever taken in front of the courts, it'd be a slight chance that the bill would be declared unconstitutional because of the weight that courts give to the presumption that all bills are constitutional upon their passage. However, in the not-too-distant future, we've had that discussion. Bills have been declared unconstitutional. And that's the one thing, Mr. Chairman, that I think we really need to look at, that we need to look at the facts, that this bill is a lot different than the substitute. A lot different. The title's different. The catch title's different. The descriptions are all different. In most cases, we'd probably say, nah, it's not the same. That's what we probably say. I don't think that's going to happen today. But I do want you to look at that and have some reservation when you cast your vote as to whether we're doing the right thing as to our Constitution on Section 20. And I do want to reiterate that the plain hard statistics and facts are that if you take your children and put them in a gun-free zone, and these people know it's a gun-free zone, and you advertise it, we're not putting them in the best situation they can be in. We just aren't. So, you know, it's unfortunate that we're, I think, at this point in time, and I think a lot of education is going to have to be made on the local level, and to let them know what the statistics actually are. And I'm a firm believer in local control. And I know that the folks that testified up in education that wanted local control, and I'll represent to you that the local school boards, the community colleges, and the university wanted local control. But we've got to get that education out there so they actually know what the facts are. And I think all of us today know what the facts are. And you know that you're going to be torn between doing what you know can make kids safer and what your constituents want. And it's a tough thing to do. So, Mr. Chairman, I would, with that, I would just say that I would hope that we'd either change some things in this particular bill, maybe take the findings out, modify it somewhat, put an education thing in there so people know that what the facts actually are, some places they can go to get a better understanding about how these mass killers operate and how they think. So the locals have an opportunity to know what the facts actually are. I think we're a long ways from having a perfect bill. But I can't vote for the substitute. I would hope that you would not either.
Further discussion and a technical reminder, we are on the amendment, Standing Committee Amendment 1 to House Bill 14. President Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, with respect to the bill, the substitute amendment, with respect to information that's developed by advocates to advance their position, whether or not it is safer or less safer, or there's less or more carnage that may happen inside of a school, whether you determine a gun-free zone or some other regulation, what I submit to you is that advocates on both sides will develop their information that advances each of their positions. But one thing I do know, and I do believe, is this. I've looked at the sponsor list, and not a single sponsor comes from Laramie. In fact, you can look down on that sponsor list and see if they represent your community. I can also tell you that with respect to school districts and schools within Albany County, if parents are brought in to discuss what they want to do and how they want to approach their security, the answer would be different depending on the school, the location, the proximity to Laramie, the proximity to city police, the number of students there, and a variety of other decisions. We all have an undeniable right to bear our own arms and protect ourselves. And we provided a concealed weapons process where folks can go through minimal training to bear arms to protect themselves. And frankly, that training is, for the most part, we just want to make sure if you're bearing arms, you don't hurt somebody else or discharge the firearm inadvertently. I've been through those classes, I think, four times for each one of my children. and they're good classes, but they don't teach you to shoot somebody or to defend someone else in a life-threatening method. As much as you have the right to bear arms, people who send their children to school have every right to determine who they want to be their protectors. Just as much as you have the right in your own home to decide whether your neighbor can come into your house and defend you, you might say, look, stay home. I'll do my own defending or I'll call the police. But I certainly get to choose who I bring onto my property to protect me. Now, I have no doubt that maybe in Albany County and in Harmony School or someplace where you have four or five parents, sometimes 10 parents, maybe 20 parents, they have small schools that are remote from the city of Laramie, they all might get together, they might now all know each other. And they might decide among themselves that let's bear arms. Every time you come and go to school, in fact, you can have it concealed or unconcealed. We're going to make a statement. Or they might say, you know, we're comfortable doing a modification of this. Let's all agree to go get special training. There's special training out there available for people how to defend the public or to defend others besides yourself. They might choose that. Now, with respect to the schools where these sponsors are or anybody else here, what this bill does is says, look, we recognize there are different circumstances for communities. You may like your law enforcement. You may not like your law enforcement. You may trust them. You may not trust them. You may like your school protection plan. You may not. But in those instances, if you determine for your own reasons on a community basis that you ought to have permit folks with concealed weapons to carry them in these schools or other places or on the university, then you're free to choose that, and you're free to say, no, that's not the way we're going to do it. In this school, at Laramie High School, or maybe at Natrona High School, or maybe KW or Campbell County High School, you may say, that's not the way we're going to do it. We have another way to protect parents and their families and their children, and we choose to do it another way. And we choose that when we encounter these instances, that we will have trained police officers come in and protect the children. And that's certainly your choice, is who becomes your protector. Now, I think when you're born into this world, into this United States, you probably agree to be defended by the United States Army from foreign services, foreign threats, but you don't necessarily agree to have them defend you anytime, any place. You agree to have the police and the sheriff in different instances. In most instances, we do give you the choice of whether to call the police, what to do, how you want to protect yourself. And the notion that somehow your right to bear arms means that you get to go into places where people send their children and tell those families that I'm here for your good and you have to let me here because I have a concealed weapon. That certainly has never been the law of Wyoming in the past. And it violates almost every instance of, we have bills where parents wanted, didn't come through, but parents want to be able to choose parental rights. What about the parental rights here to send their children to a gun-free school if that's what they're choosing? Are there risks involved? Certainly there might be. These parents are perfectly capable of making that decision, and they're perfectly capable of electing school boards that will reflect their opinions and implement policies that they believe as parents will protect their children the way they want to be protected. But to suggest that we here in Cheyenne are going to now insist that every parent has to agree, as a condition of sending your children to school, that they will be protected by people that's only training is to have passed a gun safety program and gotten a concealed weapon and done a safety background check. That's it. I think if you went out and polled your constituents, you might find some that would agree with that, but you'd find a much larger group that said, no, not interested. I'll choose who I want to protect my kids, and I'm going to choose the police department or the sheriff's department.
Further discussion on the amendment, which is the substitute bill, Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise against the Standing Committee Amendment, support of the original bill. I'd like to begin by talking about our permit holders and the record of permit holders in Wyoming. And, Mr. Chairman, I think you know that we have kind of a dual system in Wyoming. The concealed carry permission in Wyoming originally came about by permit. And, of course, now it's possible to have concealed carry in Wyoming without a permit. The reason we have both systems is that folks that want to avail themselves of the permit want to be able to have reciprocity with other states. That's the major reason we do it. More than 30 states allow us to have reciprocity so that these permit holders can carry in other states. The biggest reason people want to have a permit, besides self-protection, Mr. Chairman, is that that's a substitute for the federal background check. When you buy firearms and you have to go through a background check. Well, the permit qualifies for that. That's the most substantial thing about these folks is that they've been through a federal background check to receive their ability to and privilege to carry a firearm. Mr. Chairman, I assure you that these folks take this obligation very seriously, and there are not a history of abuse of people with permits. They're incredibly law-abiding citizens. They're incredibly careful. Mr. Chairman, the other thing I want to point out to you is there's recent studies that say what we should do if we're involved in a, God forbid, Mr. Chairman, if you are involved in a place where there's a shooter going off. Someone has come into a public place, and they've selected this to commit mass murder, Mr. Chairman. The reaction people have is to cower, to hide, to try to run away. And if you can get away, that's good, Mr. Chairman. But the most important thing to do is if you can't get away is to fight back. Fight back with everything you have. Because, Mr. Chairman, it only takes seconds. It only takes seconds for mayhem to occur. And in that time, the time that you spend calling 911 when you could have rushed the attacker or thrown a trash can at him or resisted with every effort that you have. That's what you have to do. And you know, Mr. Chairman, if you have a gun, you should use it. You should use that gun even if you're not the best shot, even if you maybe weren't the best marksman. Because at that point, Mr. Chairman, it's the only chance you all have. And that's what we are trying to do with this bill, Mr. Chairman. Folks, I'm speaking over here, Senator Geis. Mr. Chairman, I ask for...
Point of order. Could we have... Quinn, thank you. Proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we can't put enough policemen in our classrooms. The school resource officer idea can't possibly work. The best we're doing now is we have one in every school, and we haven't even reached that. They can't be everywhere in a school. They can't check every backpack. It's not possible, Mr. Chairman. There's no amount of money that we're going to put in a budget to make it possible for everyone to be safe by having a school resource officer present. It's just not going to happen. And it just takes the time between calling 911 or calling that officer on the radio when they're across the police yards. That is the time that, frankly, we can't afford. So, Mr. Chairman, why do you think that mass shootings occur in gun-free zones? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? I support the original bill. I ask you to vote against the amendment.
Continuing our discussion on the amendment, Majority Floor Leader, you were behind Senator Case. We'll follow up, and then we'll go to you, Senator Pappas.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of things, members of the Senate, and I've taken a close look at the title on the constitutional situation, I believe that this is germane and clearly we can have the substitute bill. But what I want to submit to the Senate are some problems I see in the substitute bill, Mr. Chairman, and some questions of the good chairman of the Education Committee. And I'm one that really is very careful about legislative findings. And what we say in these legislative findings could be utilized many, many times later on. And quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, usually they've come back to haunt us. And on the legislative finding, one particular just reaches out to me on page 3, lines 10, where we talk about Wyoming's history reflects the dangers of relying on armed private police forces. Well, then it refers on to our Constitution, but our Constitution talks about bringing people in to do that, not necessarily what may have happened with our own history. So I'm not sure that's a good argument or something we should have in our findings of fact. The next thing, Mr. Chairman, that I see has a potential issue, just because of the way it might actually work out in the real world, is if you look at page 5, lines 17 through 19, where we have the 21 and under, 19 existing laws, 19 or 18 to 21. Now 21 would be in this particular section. How does that reflect, and how do we enforce that for other parts of existing law? On page 6, we're injecting something into law that if it's in law currently, I'd like to know where. No decision by a governing body under this section shall be subject to appeal. Are we specifying in this particular situation, talking about concealed carries, this is the only place where it's not subject to appeal, or do that in other areas? Mr. Chairman, going on to page 9, we're going to treat members of boards, commissions, or other governmental entities the same as we do law enforcement on personal immunity. I worry about that one. Mr. Chairman, the last one is just about the Board of Trustees for our community colleges, and all of us know and understand that we elect the Board of Trustees within the county, but yet they have other counties under their jurisdiction, and that's where we have facilities in those other counties. So that means that the Board of Trustees up in Sheridan County will tell the people over in Campbell County what they can do and cannot do. These are just some questions I have, Mr. Chairman, but I'd like to see if we could have some answers on before we vote on this.
Continuing our discussion on the amendment, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, this topic seems to be always divisive, has been forever. I believe that you've all received the same emails as I have. Maybe I've received a few more since I was on the Education Committee. However, we see the conversation both sides. And frankly, what I see is that the folks in some of these gun-free zones, especially the schools, really have a fear of having guns, weapons in the schools, the concealed weapons, I should say. And no one on the other side seems to understand that fear. I don't know whether it's a myopic view from those proponents that want to just bear weapons in protection of themselves. I have no issues with that. I believe in the Second Amendment rights. I mean, I've been dealing with weapons for the last 24 years in the military. I've learned weapons trainings. I was a marksman on two different weapons. I enjoy shooting weapons, but there's a place for weapons in that, and there's people who should handle weapons in certain situations. I know that in the military they teach you about crisis situations and how to distinguish friend from foe. I don't believe too many training situations of the gun safety situations teach you that. They teach you how to handle a weapon, and as the good president said on gun safety and not to accidentally discharge a weapon. But it doesn't teach you the thinking that's required. And frankly, I believe it's a a decision that needs to be made at the local level. And that's all this bill does. It takes the original bill that allowed these five gun-free zones to remain gun-free if the local body so chooses to do so. That's all it does. It just gives them the option to do that. Frankly, we at the local level elect folks to make those decisions for us. They know better than the 30 of us here and the 60 down the hall what works best for them. We should not impose those decisions at the local level. It's not, as I said in committee, it's not a one-size-fits-all. Let's let those local folks decide whether they need to allow weapons in a remote school or to not allow weapons in a university football game. I think it's not incumbent upon the Senate or the House to make that type of a decision. And frankly, in my personal view, that I believe it tramples upon my rights if someone comes into a school where my children are and makes themselves the de facto police force without training and without any knowledge of the administration there. There could be five or six people packing weapons, and they all pull out a weapon if a shooter comes in, and all of a sudden what happens? Confusion, mass confusion. Who's the shooter then? I know you've heard all these scenarios, and there could be an incident where someone will probably get hurt from friendly fire. I just think that it's not incumbent upon us to make that decision. That's a local responsibility for those local elected officials. And I would urge you to vote for this amendment. Frankly, as far as I'm concerned, if the amendment is not on there, then I would have to vote to not further the original bill.
Continuing our discussion on the amendment, which is the substitute bill, Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this bill versus the amendment seems to be, in my thinking or in the way I'm viewing it, seems to be the difference between a black and white, and that's what the argument seems to have been so far, versus gray. And there's 48 school districts, so let's call it 48 shades of gray. Couldn't help myself, Mr. Chairman. But in fact, this is as I read this substitute bill, or I don't see this as guns versus no guns. I see this as the local district being able to determine what best fits their local conditions and situation. You may have a large school that has an SRO in it, but that same district may have a small school, just as the president was saying, out in the boonies, where it makes more sense because the response time of the police may be slower. The other aspect of that, in my thinking, is in a particular school and school district, the principal, this substitute bill gives the district the authority to do this, where the principal knows who has a gun, who has a firearm in their school. And that principal may actually have particular teachers that they're comfortable allowing for firearms. But it seems a nightmare scenario to me for a principal to have a school filled with 1,500 kids and people coming in and out, and you don't know who has a weapon and who doesn't have a weapon. The other question I have for there are no Senate sponsors on this bill, so I guess for the proponents of the original bill, is that there, as the sponsor of the chairman of the Education Committee said, there are, in current statute, there are 10 locations listed where you cannot bring firearms. They removed 5 of them. And so from the one of the proponents speaking. He was talking about mass murderers and that there is a history. And I saw the gentleman who, I guess, had done the study of the mass murderers, that they look for gun-free zones. They plan this in advance. And if that's the case, and if that's what we're trying to protect against, why in the world would we still allow churches to not be on this list? There's a synagogue two blocks from here. We all see what's going on around the world toward the Jews. Why in the world, if we're going to do something like this, like the original bill, why wouldn't we include churches on this? If you're looking for a gun-free zone and you're a mass killer and churches are still on here, you're actually putting them up with lights. And as a matter of fact, I believe there was a mass killing at a church down in Florida just a couple of years ago. So if the proponents of the bill would explain to me, if you're talking about Second Amendment rights and you're going to allow guns in these various places, why not churches and, frankly, bars? Or any of the other, I can understand jails or prisons, but I'm trying to understand the logic of the five that were chosen and the two or three that weren't chosen.
Chairman Coe, do you want to proceed or wait till we have some more discussion? Okay, let's proceed then with the discussion. Senator Landon, on the amendment, which is a substitute bill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I wasn't going to rise. There's been some great conversation on this substitute bill. Like my desk mate, I believe it gives me a little more comfort than the original bill. But I still had some questions. Just curious, maybe the chairman of education, when he does rise, might be able to touch on a couple things. Was there any testimony on the bill in committee with regard to the cost of liability insurance, if you know, for our colleges, our university, for our schools? If so, what does that fiscal note look like? The other question that I had was, I appreciated the committee picking up on and including, Mr. Chairman, the idea that there are accreditations at the college level and at the university level, which are, frankly, very important to a university even surviving. Without accreditation, you might as well not have these programs. And we singled out in this substitute bill the child care centers. I was just curious if there was any testimony with regard to other programs that might be affected in terms of accreditation, if we just blanket from the state level or elsewhere, just throw the doors open with regard to concealed carry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Senator Anderson, and Chairman Coe is waiting to respond to a lot of this.
Mr. Chairman, 123 years ago in 1892, there was a group down here in Cheyenne that decided to invade Johnson County. They hired a multitude of Texas gunfighters, all brought their own weapons. They were marksmen. They were really good with the weapons. They spent a day at KC, my hometown, trying to kill two guys. All day, 40 of them shot, never could kill them. They had to burn them out. That's just one example of people not being able to hit what they're shooting for, people not being able to use a gun. These were hired guns that said they could do that. I have a problem with this concealed carry person getting a permit because he knows how to shoot the pistol. He knows nothing about shooting a person in a situation where he has never been in before. The organizations call it the freeze. When you pull your pistol out and you can't pull the trigger and your opponent can pull his trigger. The people that are doing this shooting, they know when to pull the trigger. The person with the concealed weapons permit may or may not know when to pull the trigger or be able to do that in a stressful situation. So for me, that local option is a good one. And I'm not going to depend on people with a concealed carry permit. I know a lot of them. I have them myself. My family has them. A lot of them cannot pull the trigger when the moment arrives. And we need protection in the schools. I agree with the previous speaker. We need to hire that protection with people who know how to do this. Thank you.
At this point, then, we'll go back to the chairman and kind of tie things up here. Go ahead, Chairman Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to answer my good friend, the Majority Floor Leader's question on page 3, talks about Wyoming history reflects the dangers of relying on armed private police forces, and the Constitution prohibits all this. If you look at it, references Wyoming Constitution, Article 19, Section 6, which says importing armed bodies to suppress violence prohibited exception. No armed police force or detective agency or armed body or unarmed body of men shall ever be brought into the state for the suppression of domestic violence except upon application of the legislature or executive when the legislature cannot be convened. That's why you see that section in the bill. To answer my good friend from Goshen County's concern that under Article 3, Section 20, laws to be passed by bill, alteration, or amendment of bills. Draw your attention to the original bill. If you go to page 2, it starts with paragraph B. If you go to the substitute bill, our paragraph A, it's identical. And you'll also see that we go down through the same laundry list of stuff they have here and insert two words, if authorized. As far as the rest of the original bill relating to courtrooms and private property, if you go to page 9 of the bill, you'll see where we address that at the bottom of page 9. So everything you see in the original bill, we address in the substitute bill. There's no difference. It's in there. To answer more questions, to go to the Majority Floor Leader, if you look in the bill, you'll see that the governing entity, and in this case I'm going to use Community College Board of Trustees, can do this on a facility-by-facility basis. So, if they, the main campus is in Sheridan, for instance, and they've got an extension over in Gillette, they make that decision because that's their facility. That's their facility. As far as the appeal process, if somebody walks into the City Council in Riverton and says, we want to do this in your council chambers, we want to have concealed carry in the council chambers, there is no appeal process. Who are you going to appeal that to? District Court? Supreme Court? They wouldn't let us bring concealed carry into the council chambers. So members of the Senate, this is a good substitute bill. It does what it needs to do. This doesn't prohibit concealed carry in schools. It doesn't prohibit that. It just says it's got to be authorized at the local level. So this is a concealed carry bill. And I can tell you a lot of districts would choose that option on a facility-by-facility basis, on a cost basis, on a situation, for instance, where you might have a small rural school in Converse 1, which I've been out to, that's a good 40 miles out of town. They might want to authorize somebody out there to do it. So this is a good bill. The original bill sends a mandate back to the local level, and we shouldn't be doing that. We have elected officials that are elected to do a job. Let's make them make the decisions at the local level. They do it best.
Ready for the question? Oh, Senator Meyer.
A couple of things here, guys. One, I'd like to let everybody know just how trustworthy our concealed carry permit holders are. Now, a regular policeman is 30 times less likely to commit a crime. And our concealed permit holders, and this is by statistics, are 5 to 6 times less likely than a policeman. They're that much more trustworthy when it comes to committing crimes. That's one of the things that I think we have to look at as far as educating people. The other thing is, and we haven't talked a lot about Utah. Utah basically has what we're trying to do. And they've had it for 15 years. And there's been no blood in the streets. There's been one accidental discharge by a teacher who was fired for it. And instead of the headlines that Colorado has had with their gun-free zones, the Aurora Theater shooting, 12 victims and 59 injured. 12 victims and 59 injured. And now to address the concerns that people have that concealed carry permit holders are not, up to snuff when they get into that situation where where they may freeze or may not freeze. Essentially, where you get the benefit of this is not when you go in and you're going to have an altercation with a madman. Where you get the benefit of it is that the madman knows that he could have an altercation and doesn't show up in the first place.
Further discussion? Question? Majority Floor Leader Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just again for the good chairman of the Education Committee, a couple of my questions didn't get answered. And they're pretty important. I wish if he could, I'd appreciate it. The first one is about community colleges, where the community colleges are elected in a particular county. They have facilities in another county, yet they're going to make a decision for what's right for that other county, where that county doesn't have any local elected officials to be involved. How he sees that shaken out. Then the other one, Mr. Chairman, is on the immunity. You know, we're going to give members of boards, commissions, or other government entities immunity for personal liability, the same as law enforcement, and have we done that in any other way, shape, or form in our statutes? And I don't think we have.
Further discussion? Any follow-up on the questions? Chairman Coe?
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to get an answer to that. In the bill, it talks about facility-by-facility basis, and I understand the majority of floor leaders' concerns, but what you really have, if you have a campus in Sheridan, in Northern Wyoming College, and they got a campus in Gillette, because that campus is located in Gillette, who controls that? My contention, and I think the bill addresses that, but I'll try to confirm it, it's on a facility-by-facility basis, a location-by-location basis, and because that particular entity in Gillette is controlled by a board of trustees at the college in Sheridan, and this is an outreach campus, I think they have control of that, even though it might be in a different county or a different city. But I'll try to get a good answer for that.
Proceed now. Question on the amendment. Question being called. Are all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment 1 to House Bill 114, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. Division being called.
Now you got to stand up when they say no.
Division called. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, Dan? Nine, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 114 has passed. We are back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Now we've finished the highfalutin constitutional debate and all that sort of thing. I've got a much more prosaic question to ask about the bill. One of the complaints I've heard from my constituents is that they routinely carry their gun in their motor vehicle, either in some kind of a rack or in some kind of a container, and they're scared that if they drive onto the grounds of one of these institutions, you know, school to pick up their kids, community college, park and do their business, and they just want to have their gun in their car and leave it there because that's where they keep it and it's convenient for other purposes. Does, number one, are they right in complaining that they're under existing law in danger of being nailed for having a gun in their car under those circumstances? And two, does the bill as it now stands, or frankly the original bill, either one, did they prohibit that kind of activity, which is, I think, a perfectly innocent activity that a number of our constituents are engaged in.
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll have to find out exactly all the particulars of it. I can tell you, I think today, in a gun-free school zone, a student, we have a lot of people who live in the country in this state, and most of them have gun racks in the back of their pickups. A lot of people keep guns in there, and I think they're prohibited right now as it stands from driving up within so many yards of a school and having a gun in their vehicle. But I'll try to answer that question. I'm not absolutely sure.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I would appreciate an answer to that question, since frankly I'm thinking of a second reading amendment, that that's something that ought to be a uniform law and right across the state, that people, as long as they keep their weapons contained somehow, can and leave them in their personal car, can do that when they're on the roads or streets or parking lots in one of the within the grounds of one of these institutions.
Majority Floor Leader Bebount.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought there was a buffer zone in some of these areas in our statutes, and I can't recall, but therein lies another problem. If the school board determines that a facility, a building, should be not allowed to have a concealed carry, well, what about when they park in the parking lot? So do they go outside the facilities, and do they go to the parking lots, and or do they do the perimeter, and they have a like some of the school districts have a gate. Is it outside the gate, or some of them don't? Is it street side? How do you determine where? What if they're parked on the street, yet they said that the facility is off limits, but they're parked on the street? What does that do? I mean, there's so many unanswered questions that we really need to know the answers to these.
Continued discussion on the bill. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, that's one of the reasons I have a concealed carry. If you have that weapon in your vehicle, it's in a scabbard or under a coat, it's a concealed weapon. If you have it in a rack in the back of your pickup, it's an open carry. It's completely visible. But if it's not visible, it's a concealed carry and it's a felony. And that's why most of the doctors in this state also have a concealed carry permit, because if you have your shotgun and you're going hunting and you have it in a bag, it's a concealed weapon. And you've got to have a permit to do that.
Chairman Coe.
Mr. Chairman, I failed to answer one of the questions asked by my height-restricted senator friend from Casper. He asked a question on liability. That's because all the other senators from up in that part of the state are much taller. But actually, we did have some testimony. Not too much, but I've since heard from a number of districts who have been contacted their insurance companies, and if, in fact, the original bill were to pass, they've been told that their liability insurance would go up, but they didn't say how much.
Senator Barn.
Mr. Chairman, just an object or something to think about. If you have a school board from this law now that has the authority to grant guns in a school, let's just say there are seven school board members. They have a public meeting. They get input. They decide that, well, the public wants to have shooting in our school or have protection in our school. They have the vote on the school board. Four people say yes, and three people say no. Then that will go forth in that district. Then the people that don't want the shootings, they rally and they go about for the next election. They have a school board and they find next time they do it again, and then they have an election. This time it gets 4-3. This time there's four that don't want it and three that do. So I would really like to see some kind of amendment or have us think about this. Maybe have some kind of an amendment that says if we're going to have these gun-free zones, how long are they going to last? Are they going to be, not only do they create kind of a patchwork around the state, which is sometimes hard to find out whether your school has a gun or not, but then a patchwork that can change every 2 years with a school board election.
Senator Landon, continued discussion. We're on the bill now.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. On the bill, and I don't know if this will go to the questions of the of our floor boss or not. I can only represent a facility that I've been associated with for 30 years. And, you know, I'm certain that there are weapons in cars at that college campus up in central part of the state. But that doesn't mean that the security officers that work there are going car to car with a crowbar and prying those cars open to find out if there's a weapon in there. What we do at the residence hall on the west side of campus, Mr. Chairman, is that we do ask of those students that they check those weapons, and we have safes that we provide for them, and they are kept in a secure environment, and they can check those weapons in and out because of hunting seasons and whatever. If there is an incident in which something is discovered in a car, then they're asked to remove that off of the campus or to secure it in the safe. So I hope that's just one example of a statewide full of all sorts of schools and different environments, but that's one college campus. But therein, fellow senators, lies part of the difficulty with this entire subject. And while I admitted to you that this got me closer, I would not presume to make a decision here to tell that district board at that college, you will by golly allow this or else in your gymnasium structure, down in your theater events, whatever. I think it's pretty appropriate that district board make that decision and talk about what they really do want on that campus. I actually don't see anything wrong with that. But going back to that residence hall environment, Mr. Chairman, that's where I get a little bit of heartburn, because we work very hard. That's part of my day job, is to work pretty hard with our students on that campus. And I really don't want more guns in more places in those residence hall environments. There's too much volatility. I mean, we remember when we were 18 and 19 and 20. And what was going on in our lives right then? The stresses of tests, the anxiety over relationships. Yes, there's a lot of alcohol involved at certain times. No matter how hard we try to keep that away, that's involved. So, yeah, it does give me a little bit of heartburn to think that we're going to introduce, you know, more weapons into that environment. And we wouldn't be able, were it not for that local control issue, to be able to do anything about that. And so, senators, I'm not sure, you know, when we get to the final analysis, what I'm going to do with this, but I do think that we've moved it closer to an ability for me to consider it. I like the fact that our district board can at least put up some parameters or at least talk about some of the things that I just brought up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Continuing our discussion, while we're on the bill, further discussion, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion, that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 114, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. House Bill 114 is passed the Committee of the Whole. Senator Burns.
Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor, please?
Proceed, please.
Mr. Chairman, last time probably I'm going to speak on these coins. This is the last week. The limited edition legislative set, there were only 100 sets being made, are going to be delivered tomorrow to those who have already ordered. And just a reminder that at the end of this session, then they'll be released to the public. But right now, the legislature is the only ones who can buy them. So this is your last chance this week. You're welcome to grab a form here if you'd like, and I'll give it to Rene Beauvais tomorrow. They have the nickel finish. This is the silver coin, but they look quite similar to it. And, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Okay. Next bill up for our consideration, House Bill 183. Reading clerk, read the bill.
House Bill number 183, Insurance Coverage Early Refills of Prescription Eye Drops. Sponsored by Representative Petroff. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Kraft, Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Scott, what is your pleasure, noting there is an amendment as well?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the committee of the whole rise and report to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 183 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill number 183, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 21.
Chairman Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of standing committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, what the standing committee amendment does is on page 3, lines 21, 22, it removes the sentence, enforcement of this section shall be performed by the commissioner or his designee. Mr. Chairman, the reason for that was the insurance commissioner came to committee and said he would rather not have that there. He has general powers to enforce provisions in the insurance code, which this is, and he was afraid that by singling this out that way, it might disparage in the minds of some of the attorneys roundabout his general powers to enforce other provisions of the insurance code, and the sentence was unnecessary. So the standing committee took it out. I would urge adoption of the standing committee amendment.
Question on the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The committee or the amendment is passed. Back on the bill, House Bill 183.
Mr. Chairman, I yield to Senator Von Platen for an explanation of this good little House bill.
Senator Von Platen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 183, the eye drops. What it does is ask the insurance companies to pay a little bit early, a few days early, and allow somebody that is on prescription eye drops to obtain them several days earlier than their 30 days or 60 or 90 days, whatever your prescription and your insurance company allows today. So the meat of the bill is on page 2, lines 12 through 19, where it says a renewal is requested by the insured at least 23 days for a 30-day supply, 45 days for a 60-day supply, and 68 days for a 90-day supply. What that is saying is that about you can renew your prescription or get a refill for your prescription at 75% of the full 30 days or 60 days or 90 days. There's a lot of people in the world, especially on self-administrated medications, where they can't calculate exactly how many drops are supposed to go in their eyes. So if they miss and drop a couple drops, or they think they put 4 and they're supposed to put 2 in, and whatever, it runs the bottle out a little bit early. All this does is say the insurance companies will allow you to refill your prescription at 75% of the allocated time. But what this bill also says is if you need an additional prescription beyond what you have been prescribed, in other words, you're going for 13, 14, or 15 months' worth of subscriptions, 14 bottles if you are on a bottle-a-month type of subscription, you still have to go back to the doctor. So it doesn't say you're allowed any more refills than what you were originally prescribed. It's just saying you're allowed to get them a little bit early. So if you run out at 10 months, you'll have to go call your doctor or see your doctor to get it re-prescribed for another year. So that's all it does. And on page 3, it does talk about that you can get an additional one for a daycare center or school. This would be somebody that, especially children, that would need one left in the school, because chances are if they have to take several drops a day, they're probably going to forget their bottle. So this would allow for one of those. Pretty standard. CMS or your Medicaid, Medicare regulations allow for 70% of the time allocated. All we settle on here is 75% of the time, so 23 days out of a 30-day prescription. And really, that's all the bill does, and the amendment took away the enforcement by the insurance commission, which he does have. I'll have to get that correct. It's not the insurance, but the I think it is insurance. But anyway, it takes it away because under Title 26, he has general enforcement of anything we've written in the statute. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I stand for questions.
Further discussion on House Bill 183, Majority Floor Leader Bebound.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question of the sponsor, and what I'm trying to get my handle on is why you need this, and maybe it's a script for eye drops are different, but if I have a script and I have to go get it, and there's a period of time that I have to go for renewals, I can go in and say I want it for a 3-month period and not have to worry about the renewal. Sometimes the doctor signs off it, sometimes he doesn't. So I'm able to do everything here that I want to do without putting that in the law for other types of prescriptions. Is this specialized because it's only eye drops? And I'm trying to see the difference between this and a regular script.
Senator Von Flatiron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did have a monthly insurance is how mine was set up. So you had to renew every month. Eye drops, because of the size of the dispensing tool and the fact that you're probably or could be a little bit jittery, you tend to miss your eyes, or you could miss your eyes. You could count three drops versus two drops. But anyway, so every month I'd have to go back in, and all this does is allow you to get it a few days earlier. There's some people with glaucoma or taking an antibiotic for their eyes, and they have to do it every day, and they have to do it two and three times a day. And if they should run out, especially with some people with severe glaucoma, when they run out, they actually start visually, they start losing eyesight almost instantly. So they got to keep this prescription up, and that's why we've asked for the to be filled a little bit early.
Senator Bebaum?
I understand that, but you still haven't answered my question. When I write a script and I call the ophthalmologist and want it, why couldn't I just say I want a 3-month supply instead of having a month and having to have a bill that says I can get it shorter period of time and if I want?
Mr. Chairman, still on. I can tell you that the insurance company that I dealt with all for the last several years, 1 month is all they allowed. You cannot ask for any, and they set the terms of it. One of the reasons for this bill is that every pharmacy was doing it differently. They'd allow you that 3 days early or 4 days early. Next one would say, no, your prescription's 30 days. Right on that nose, you can have another refill in 30 days. So it was a mixed bag all over the state. What this is trying to do is saying, from 23 days on a 30-day subscription, you can refill it.
Chairman Scott, did you want to do any follow-up? No. Any further discussion? Oh, Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate. I was going to talk about this just briefly. My own personal experience is this past year I finally got my sleep study done, and if I can encourage anybody that if your wife tells you you snore or you stop breathing, I'd strongly encourage you to get a sleep study done. And I found out that I have severe sleep apnea, and I have a CPAP machine now. And that CPAP machine is a lifesaver, and literally, but it has other consequences and other things that happen because of the forced air and the amount of pressure that I'm required to have. I've had some eye infections and some different things happening with my eyes, and I personally have had issues with eye drops, and just as they said, those and I wished I had brought mine with me because it would have been but the eye drops that are in such a small little container. There's only so few drops, but, you know, and they're absolutely right about missing your eye and having issues. And I've run out, and I've had the majority floor leaders' questions, you know, could the ophthalmologist write that? Maybe. I don't know. But I've run into issues with this prescription and others that say that, hey, you know, your prescription, you can't renew it until the date set forth. And so this personally would help me personally because I have personally ran out, you know, and I've had dry eyes and infections and just a few other different issues like that. So I can see where this is a tremendous help.
President Nicholas on 183.
I probably use eye drops more than anybody. But I'll tell you, every time that somebody has a problem with their prescription or they want to get drugs, they come down here and solve their problem. And being a frequent user of eye drops, and you can generally look at my eyes and you can tell why, but at some point you have to ask yourself, what is it that we have to regulate these private contracts between insurance and care provider or and the members? If one member can't figure it out or it's a little bit inconvenient, and what the insurance companies are really trying to do is regulate all the costs of insuring and force people to use within their prescribed amounts. And you hear, well, these small bottles are so hard to regulate.
Well, I'd submit to you that why do they make drops that small and charge you so much? And then the solution is, instead of the manufacturers adding a 5 or 6 more drops, they let the ophthalmologists come down here and force you to pay more insurance to buy more bottles. And the reason why the pharmacy or the pharmaceutical companies don't provide things of economic value, because they know the legislature will step up, drive your insurance up, and so all of us will pay more for eye drops. And this is no way to regulate your insurance policy and drive up your costs. We used to have a legislator from Casper who was an insurance salesman. Every time he'd come down, he says, folks, this is dangerous. You get involved in trying to regulate that market, you're just going to increase your premiums. And every time we go home, we all complain that premiums go up for some reason or another. What we ought to be doing is, instead of doing it this way, regulate, tell manufacturers to add another 3 drops into their bottles. But to simply say, well, for those people that can't figure it out or they're unwilling to be there or work it out with their pharmacist or their doctor, we're going to provide you another remedy to force me and all the other insureds to pay for that convenience. It's expensive, and we do it every time. We do it every time, and pretty soon your premiums go up. I know how inconvenient it is to have these things run out, but you have to plan. And part of the planning is trying to regulate what is the most expensive part of your insurance, and that's pharmaceuticals in general.
Further discussion will go with Anderson, James Lee, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know about the insurance companies and what they do or don't do, but I do know about government agencies that administer health care and products and the plan, and they do not allow you to get another prescription until they say you're going to get one. So maybe insurance companies can be swayed on that, but I know some government agencies after you're 65 that cannot be swayed on that. I personally like this bill and would support it.
Chairman Scott.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of things here. First, your pharmaceutical benefit is not the major part of your cost. They're well behind in typical insurance, the cost for the hospital benefits and the cost for the physicians and other providers. Second, the insurance companies are trying to cut their costs. They're trying to catch people that need these things and make them buy one out of their own pocket rather than provide the insurance that they're paying for. And ordinary people, don't have the ability to fight with one of these big insurance companies. That's why we regulate insurance, and we do it in quite a number of ways. This is not particularly unique, and it is a real problem, Mr. Chairman, that they tighten these things up so much, and then what a number of them do is they say, okay, if you'll buy from us, from our pharmaceutical benefit manager, you can get your 90-day supply. But if you buy from the local pharmacy, you're restricted to 30 days. And that makes this bill doubly important. It is a support, I think, to your local pharmacies to be able to deal with their customers in a straightforward manner and in a way that does work for them. So I would urge adoption of the bill.
Further discussion on 183, Senator Bernard.
Yay. Mr. Chairman, I'll try to use my institutional knowledge to help this not confuse it. When you try to have an old person like me try to do drops and they're jittery like this, if you're going to get the proper concentration, you're going to get the proper amount in there, you need to pull down your lid, pull up your upper lid, tilt your head back, go this way, and drop it in. And the number one problem in medicine is compliance. And when you get compliance, it's really hard for you to comply, especially with little kids or old people, with these drops. I guarantee you that if there's a 30-day supply, a lot of these people are going to run out. If they think they miss, they'll do another drop, and they run out. And that's the purpose of this bill. The other part of this bill that I think is important is that if you have these drops and you've got a 30-day prescription, you go on a vacation, your prescription runs out here in Greece, what do? Well, you use this law to get you an extra bottle to get you through. And that's another part of this thing. So I'd encourage you to vote for this.
Thanks, Doc. All right, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 183, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. House Bill 183 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill up for our consideration is House Bill 85. Reading clerk, read the bill.
House Bill number 85, Motor Vehicle Passing Bicycles, sponsored by Representative Stubson. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Escobel, Johnson, and Myers. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? House Bill 85. Chairman Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole Rice Report, it do so if it do pass motion, on House Bill 85, passing motor vehicle passing bicycles. And I would move the good senator from Lander to explain this bill.
Oh, I didn't know he's good. Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is a really simple bill, actually. It doesn't involve concealed weapons or eye drops or anything like that. It just has to do with when a vehicle is passing a bicycle. And it's about a situation where a motor vehicle is approaching a bicycle from behind and making a pass. And all this bill says that if there's room and if space permits, will you give them at least 3 feet? And 3 feet is about this distance. And let me tell you, as a bicyclist, that's not very much, but that's all we're asking for, Mr. Chairman. And I know, Mr. Chairman, that there are bad bicyclists out there. There are bicyclists that are maybe ordinarily good riders, and sometimes they're distracted, and you can be very angry about them. But don't you think it's reasonable that when you're passing a bicycle that's going down, that you give them at least 3 feet? That's all it is. I think what happens sometimes, Mr. Chairman, is that folks don't misunderstand the speed of a bicycle. And what happens to me is, if you're coming to an intersection where maybe there's an exit ramp or something and the bicycle is continuing in a straight direction, what so often happens is the motor vehicle will speed up thinking they can kind of beat the bicycle around. And, that's often kind of a recipe for a bad outcome, Mr. Chairman. But I'll tell you what, anytime a bicycle and a motor vehicle collide, it's a bad outcome for the bicyclist, Mr. Chairman. And this is all we're asking for. The bill was changed a little bit in the House to make it more flexible. Make sure that the bicycle, which is operating lawfully, and on line 6, when space allows. There's no penalties for this either. This is not a law with a penalty. It's just a law to raise awareness to give bicyclists this much if you can, Mr. Chairman. That's all it's about.
Thank you, Senator Case. Further discussion on House Bill 85, Majority Floor Leader Bebaum.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions. When it's operating lawfully, so if you're going down a narrow road and you have the white line alongside the road and there's a 3 or 4 foot of shoulder left that's paved, and then you have other shoulders available for the bicycle, so is it considered operating lawfully if he's to the right of the white line as you're going down a narrow highway? And if that narrow highway, if he's not, then how do you determine when space allows that you're going to have to give him 3 feet? And who makes that determination? What if it's an agricultural, like some kind of a tractor pulling a a wide trailer or something, and you have that same situation exist. I'm trying to get my hands around when space allows. That's a total wide-open interpretation, yet this is a law, and I just don't think that's workable.
Further discussions or questions before we go back to Senator Case? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, on for the bill. And to try and address some of those concerns, which are good concerns, the space allows, obviously, is a difficult concept, and that was something that was added over in the House to recognize the fact that under certain circumstances it would be difficult. If we need an amendment to remove that and visit with the House about the vagueness of that, I think that's reasonable. But the reality, Mr. Chairman, is that it's up to the driver to make this determination, because there is no punishment, there's no parameters that says what would happen if this wasn't followed. There's nobody who's going to check on it or check into it. The concept here and the importance of this bill is really just to try and set a rule in place and have people understand what a reasonable distance is when you're trying to pass a bicyclist. There isn't one in statute. Nobody really has a concept of how much is enough. This is something that's been asked for by the cycling community around the state. There have been a lot of advocates that have supported this strongly. And the reason for that is this is just a state that has a very passionate cycling population. My community is no exception. We were recently rated 8th in the country as one of the most active small cities in the United States for cycling to work and commuting using bicycles, but there really aren't any rules on how to handle this. We have some rules in statute about the fact that it's the obligation of the cyclist to stay as far to the right as is safe whenever possible to allow vehicles to pass them, but really nothing in statute yet as to how much room should be available to the cyclist when that pass is being made. Again, Mr. Chairman, it's not about punishment in this legislation or trying to be punitive. It's really about setting a standard that people can understand. How much is a reasonable amount when you're trying to pass a cyclist so that it's safe for them? 3 feet is what has been asked for by the cycling community. It's a reasonable amount. Most of the time, you're not going to have any problem. But if everybody understands that this is what you're looking for, we can hopefully avoid some of the accidents and some of the tragedies we've had in recent years when people have passed too close, when there have been dangerous situations. It's trying to establish an educational program effectively to help people understand how much is enough without providing any particular punishment. No punishment is being asked for, nothing's being sought, Mr. Chairman, so that when we are sharing the lane, when we have our cyclists in the highways, on the streets, we understand what the proper way to interact with them is. So, Mr. Chairman, I hope the body will support this legislation. I hope that answers the good majority floor leader's questions.
On House Bill 85, Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just have some discussion. So the way I read the bill, if somebody's unlawfully operating a bicycle, then I don't have to give them 3 feet difference. Just some clarifications as to what unlawfully operating a bicycle might look like versus lawfully. And who gets to make that determination? So if I'm passing them and I determine that they're unlawfully operating that bike, I don't have to give them 3 feet?
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to address that real quickly, it's again, since there's no punitive aspect of this, it's really up to the driver to make the decisions on what's enough and when. The concept here, when the House added it, I suspect, is the fact that, and this is a particular problem in Laramie, you have cyclists who, at some points in time, are acting as if they're in traffic, they're on the road. Other times, they're popping up on the sidewalks, making shortcuts and doing interesting things. Those are the ones that we have some difficulty with, and I sure wish that they would follow the standard traffic law, because it does make it difficult. So the concept, I think, here is that it's very difficult to give 3 feet to the individuals who are up on the sidewalk bouncing back into the street because you're not quite sure what they're doing. Those are the ones who are acting unlawfully. Those are the ones that I believe the spirit of this is trying to get to, that it's very difficult to understand what those 3 feet are going to be. Or maybe the ones that are fully out into the street, because theoretically the law says that you're supposed to stay to the right as far as you safely can as a cyclist. So maybe the ones that are all the way over to the left, you're going to have a hard time passing them and leaving 3 feet. I think those are the things that the statute's trying to get at, and the folks over in the House were trying to amend it to incorporate. Thank you, Mr.
Any
Chairman.
Further follow-up on House Bill 85? Majority floor leader.
Just one question. So if that happens on a narrow road and I move over 3 feet because that's what I'm supposed to do, and I hit somebody in the other lane, who's responsible? Is that my fault?
Senator Case will take this one.
Mr. Chairman, I'd suggest in that circumstance there was no space to allow that move. I mean, you know, that's also not what this bill is talking about. It's about courtesy. Mr. Chairman, you know, bicycles are supposed to ride as far to the right as they practically can. But let me tell you, sometimes that's not as easy as it sounds. For one thing, we have rumble strips a lot of places in Wyoming, and sometimes, you know, those get in the way. And the other thing that happens when you're a bicyclist, you got these little skinny tires, Mr. Chairman, and that's all you got. And those little skinny tires can be hurt by rocks and gravel and things that affect your ability to operate a bicycle. So if the side of the road is not really clean, if it's really gravelly, Mr. Chairman, that's a dangerous situation for a bicyclist too. So there might be reasons why they're not as far to the right as you would like them. But if the road is clean and it's smooth, I guarantee you they don't want to be in your lane, Mr. Chairman. But if you're coming up, bicycles in the road, if you can give them 3 feet, give them 3 feet, this much room. That includes your mirrors and everything. That's not very much. And I assure you, when you're bicycling and someone goes around you at 60 miles an hour, that doesn't seem like much room at all. But that's all they're asking for. If you can actually pull over a little bit and there's no oncoming traffic, so much the better, Mr. Chairman, because anytime we have a mix-up between a bicyclist and a motor vehicle, the bicyclist loses and the motor vehicle operator has that on their conscience for the rest of their life. And this is just saying, bicyclists are entitled to a little bit of room. This much room, that's not much.
Thank you. Further discussion on House Bill 85. Question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion, that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 85. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
House Bill 85 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. Twenty. All those opposed, please stand.
Like all those boys could use a little time on a bicycle.
Eight. House Bill 85 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader?
We're done. You want to put something else up? Oh. For Jesus.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Majority Floor Leader? You got it.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
All those you've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. Mr. President.
We're done.
Had to do it for House Bill.
If the clerk would please read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 114, do pass amended. House Bill 183, do pass amended. And House Bill 85, do pass. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Dockstader.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That report's been adopted. Imagine how many House bills we could have done if our chairs had been here this morning. We have some other business. I need a list. Just give me a little. I'll have to borrow that. Let's do... Got messages in the House. Messages from the House.
March 2nd, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message number 445, Joint Conference Committee Report adopted. Mr. President, Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 30, ayes 38, noes 20, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Next item, do we have some more reports there? Oh, we're still going.
From the House of Representatives, message number 443, concurrence requested.
Well, just hold on that. We'll do it next. Senator Christensen, are you ready with Senate File 11, Selling to Junk Dealers, ID Required?
Yes, Mr. President.
Now, would the reading clerk please read in the message or the report?
From the House of Representatives, message number 443, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 11, Selling to Junk Dealers, ID Required. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 47, noes 11, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that when the Senate do adopt... Do concur with message number 443, on Senate File 11, Selling to Junk Dealers, ID Required. Members of the Senate, this improvement of this nice bill by our friends over at the House primarily takes place on page 2, and there was some concern about photocopies of individuals' ID. And so what they asked was that we just do verification of a person's name and residence through presentation of the person's United States, federal, or state-based photo identification and strike those particulars which include driver's license, passport, military ID, and so forth. And that's the essence of it. Looks like it'll work just fine, and I ask for the Senate to vote aye.
Discussion on the concurrence report. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, and I will confess I've not been able to track this in fully, makes a lot of sense to me if the records are containing the person's ID and residence as is required to be verified. If that's true, then you have a record that if there's a problem, law enforcement can go back with. If that's not true, then we get a little problem.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. In existing statute, there's already a requirement for that. And so while you don't see it in this bill, it's in existing statute that they record who's selling the product. And this, we added that idea of a photocopy, and there was a concern about that, and so it's just a verification to make sure it's the person they say they are.
The motion is, that the Senate do concur with Senate File number 11 being a part of message number 443, Selling to Junk Dealers, ID Required, and you've been asked to vote aye. If the Chief Clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft excused Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platen?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 28 aye, 1 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with Senate File Number 11, selling to junk dealers. We have some conference committee reports. Senator Coe, are you ready with Senate File 95, corresponding to the speed limit?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
If the reading clerk would please read in the message.
March 2nd, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 438, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 95, speed limits. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 52, no 6, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Cole.
Mr. President, I move message number 438 and ask the body to vote aye. That being the original Senate file 95, speed limits. This bill, as you might remember, allows YDOT with discretion to go out and look at some of these two-lane highways and increase the speed limit after a study is done from 65 up to 70. The House made two changes to it. First change, you'll see on page 7, line 3, the study shall also consider placement of variable speed limit signs where appropriate. Now, we have situations where we have heavy wildlife, particularly at night, and I'll use the Pinedale area. I'll use my area west of Cody. Areas by Matisse, other areas of the state where it might be appropriate to have a variable speed limit, particularly after dark. I thought this was a good amendment. The second thing they did, they took the appropriation out. This was an appropriation, I think $180,000 it started out to get them started. The discussion in the House was that, you know, this is a $1.2 billion budget. This is a budget that has added revenues from gas tax and other things, and they felt that the highway department could, in fact, do this on their own. Remember, it's totally discretionary, so nothing says they have to go out and do this by December or anything like that, so it's totally discretionary, and I think the second part, deleting the appropriation, makes a lot of sense. So I'd ask that you do concur on Senate File 95, being message number 438.
Any discussion on the bill? The motion is that the Senate do concur with Senate File 95, and you've been asked to vote aye. If the Chief Clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft excused. Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich. Escobel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Johnson,
no.
Kinski,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Pappas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Platen,
aye.
Wasserberger,
aye.
President Nicholas,
aye.
Closing vote. Closing, vote closed. 27 aye, 2 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with Senate File 95, speed limits. Senator Coe, the job's not over. Next year I expect a bill for runway lights from Cody to Cheyenne. Senator Cooper, are you ready with Senate File number 129, Sales and Use Tax Enforcement? Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment or the message?
March 2nd, 2015, from the House of Representatives, Wyoming State Legislature, Message number 440, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 124, Sales and Use Tax Enforcement. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 48, noes 10, excused 2. House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that when the Senate, or that the Senate do concur with message number 440 on Senate File 124, Sales and Use Tax Enforcement, and ask that the Senate votes aye. Mr. President, this was a standing committee amendment that was done over there, and that was worked. It was a date or time that was worked out with the department that worked better for them, and it was a good change for the bill, and that kind of tightened up the time span on this issue. And so I've just asked you to vote aye because it's a good change.
Any discussion? If not, the motion is that the Senate do concur with Senate File 124, and you've been asked to vote aye. If the Chief Clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard. Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft excused. Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross. Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
Wasterberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 aye, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with. Thank you. By your vote, you have concurred with Senate File 124, Sales and Use Tax Enforcement, which is part of message number 440. Senator Burns, are you ready on Lottery Commission Senate File 130?
I am, Mr. President.
If the reading clerk would please read in the message.
March 2nd, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 444. Concurrence requested, Mr. President. Senate File 130, Lottery Commission Reporting Requirements. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move concurrence on message 444, Senate File 130, and ask the body to vote no. Mr. President, what this bill originally did was added the Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources Committee to the list of those getting reports from the Lottery Commission reporting requirements, and that's the way it left the Senate. When it got over to the House in committee, it was discussed that the chair of the Revenue Committee on that side had no interest in these reports, and so the committee removed the Joint Revenue Committee from getting the reports. Well, the chairman of the Revenue Committee on this side does want to get these reports, so I'd like to get a conference committee together and see if we can get Revenue Committee put back in as the recipient of these reports. And I would ask that the revenue chair be put on the conference committee.
Do not.
Any further discussions? The motion is the Senate do concur with Senate File 130 and that you vote aye, and this is part of message number 444. And you've been asked to vote no. If the reading clerk would please, not the reading clerk, if the chief clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
No.
Anderson District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Nope.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft excused Dockstetter?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Escabel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Kinski?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Pappas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Fladern?
No.
Wasserberger?
No.
President Nicholas?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 2 aye, 27 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have failed to concur with Senate File 130. Senator Cooper, are you ready on Senate File 133, Big Orange Sheep?
I am again, Mr. President.
If the reading clerk would please read in the message.
From the House of Representatives, message number 441, concurrence requested. Mr. President. Senate File 133, Bighorn Sheep Relocation. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 41, no 17, excuse 2. House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate do concur with message number 441 on Senate File 133, Bighorn Sheep Relocation, and ask the Senate to vote aye. Mr. President, the first line on this amendment was just a punctuation correction that was made during the Standing Committee. And then the other amendments here were made in conjunction with the sponsor's request because of some specific things that needed to be done. And the first one there was to cite the specific area in the document that was already cited within the bill. Now on page 2, line 7, then that had a no later date that we had no later or as soon as practical, because originally somehow or another we had put that they could wait all the way till December 31, 2020, before they had to act, and we really, the intention was them to act as soon as possible. And then also on line, page 2, line 8, that just deleted those dates again and inserted the as soon as possible, Mr. President. And that, with that, I'd ask you to vote aye.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a question here. I mean, I don't know what appendices A through N are. And that's a little difficult for me to understand that. When have we ever adopted in statute appendices to anything? I think we're on a dangerous track here when we start incorporating into our statutes reports and then appendices to a report.
Senator Hicks, would you please come here and go the floor is back to Senator Cooper. Senator Cooper, go ahead.
Okay.
I didn't see you. Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. President, on that point, and for the good senator, I'm curious whether this is going into non-codified or codified statute with regard to adopting those appendices.
I apologize for the Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. If you look on the bill on page two on lines 4, 5, and 6, you'll see where We have the words recommendations from the Wyoming statewide bighorn domestic sheep interaction working group dated September 2004, and what this is an appendancy of that particular document, and they thought that they would need it to identify specifically where they talk about this particular part of this document is all this was at. So that is the actual document, and then it just identifies the appendices to that document.
Senator Cooper, do you realize your amendment has no outside date now? It could be as soon as practical 5 years from now, as opposed to as soon as practicable but no later than? If that's the way you want your bill, that's fine.
Mr. President, if I could, the thought was there that if we put the December 31st, 2020 date in as originally was in that particular area, that then they wouldn't have to take any action for 5 years or so. So the idea was to have them take action just as soon as practicable, or
which they might deem to be 3 years from now, but that's, again, it's your, do you, your bill. All right. The motion is the Senate do concur with Senate file number 133, Bighorn Sheep Relocation. You've been asked to vote aye. If the chief clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
No.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Coe? Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft excused. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
No.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas? Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Fladern?
No.
Wasserberger?
No.
President Nicholas?
No.
Escobel, aye to no. Hastert, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 15 aye, 14 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with... Pardon me. Why don't you give me that vote count again, please? The 15-14?
Yes.
By your vote, you have failed to concur with Senate file 33, it requiring a majority of those elected. We have an excused with Senator Kraft being heading off to the UK. Senator Hicks, are you ready on Senate file number 134, Bighorn Sheep Plan?
Yes, Mr. President.
Would the reading clerk please read in the message?
From the House of Representatives, message number 442, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 134, Bighorn Sheep Plan. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 55, noes 3, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I'd like to move concurrence on message 442, which was the original Senate file number 134, and ask the body to say aye. Just two small changes on page 2, line 10, the way that read. If the plan was revised, then it would be null and void, and that changes errors. They just struck until revised and insert as revised to make sure that that stays in effect. The other one is if you turn over to page 3, line 14, just it deleted may and insert shall. What that does is it just says, in the advent that the department would have to remove those from non-emphasis areas, that they shall be reimbursed for that cost out of the Livestock Wildlife Disease Partnership account. Ask for a yes vote.
Discussion on the bill, on the message request. The motion is the Senate do concur with Senate file number 134, Bighorn Sheep Plan, and you've been asked to vote aye. If the chief clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft excused. Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer. Meyer.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
No.
Von Fladern.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 aye, 1 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with Senate File 134, Bighorn Sheep Plan. We have some appointments to conference committees. No, I'm fine. Thank you. We're almost done here. The conference committee for message number 434, which relates to the amendments to House Bill 100, highway funding, is as follows. Meyer, Chairman, Von Fladern, Bebout. The conference committee to message number 435, addressing House Bill 144, Education, School Safety, and Security, is Co-Chairman Burns and Bebout. We're at that order of business of signing of enrolled acts, or do we have some more messages? Okay, give me the conference committee reports. Senator Case, are you ready on conference committee report to Senate File 18, expungements?
I certainly am, Mr. President.
If the reading clerk would please read in the report.
Joint conference committee report. On Senate File 18, expungement of misdemeanors, reference House message number 353, signing for the House. Representative Geer, Miller, and Throne, signing for the Senate, Senators Case, Burns, and Kraft.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move message number 353 to Senate File 18, expungement of misdemeanors. I would ask the Senate to vote in favor of the message. What the conferees have decided is that the bill was most appropriate as it left the Senate. So this conference committee put the bill back to the exact form that left the Senate. As you recall, there was a rather lengthy amendment added on second or third reading in the House. This removes that amendment and makes it just exactly as the bill left the Senate. Please vote aye.
The motion is to adopt the Joint Conference Committee report for Senate File 18, which relates to House message number 353, and you've been asked to vote aye. If the chief clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft excused. Dockstetter.
No.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
They didn't.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Fladern.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 28 aye, 1 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, the Senate has adopted Joint Conference Committee report to set a file 18 expungement of misdemeanors referencing House message number 353. Senator Case, are you now ready on Joint Conference Committee report for precinct committee person elections, set a file 33?
I will be, Mr. President.
If the reading clerk would please read that in.
Joint Conference Committee report regarding Senate File 33, Precinct Committee Person Elections, reference House Message Number 345. Signing for the House, Representative Dan Zwanitzer, Blackburn, and Stubson. Signing for the Senate, Senators Case, Hicks, and Pappas.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move Joint Conference Committee report engulfed in message number 345 to Senate File 33, Precinct Committee Person Elections. I'd ask the Senate to vote aye. This was kind of a split the baby, Mr. President. We accepted two of the House amendments, the one on page 3, lines 13 and 14. They deleted the language if those write-in votes resulted in a tie. In such a sense, what's going to happen is that the tally is actually going to go to the chairperson of the local party, then the party will settle the tie. The clerk doesn't have to settle the tie, Mr. Chairman. And then on the next page, which is page 4, we accepted the amendment that says the previous language was after the county chairman has received notice from the county clerk that all of the members have been certified, elected, and the term of its members begin. We accepted a House amendment that says, after the county chairman has received the certified election results of all members elected in the committee. We accepted both those of the House. What we didn't accept was the issue about the 30 days, Mr. President. And if you recall, that issue is if a party chairman might be able to, with executive committee, make appointments to a precinct and committee men and women in such a manner as to affect the outcome of the fulfillment of a vacancy. So the old law said that everybody had to be in place 30 days before the vacancy was filled. And so the new law, our friends down the hall were confused about some language because they had read the language that we'd put in wrong. We did a further amendment by adding the words by appointment after selected, and that clears it all up for them. They were very happy that it's clear that anybody that is going to fulfill a vacancy has to either have been elected at the primary, or if there was no election or there wasn't a spot filled, that they would have to be in place, having been selected by appointment of the executive committee at least 30 days before they fulfill the vacancy. That made everybody happy, Mr. Chairman, and I know that it's making you very happy to hear me drone on about this, and I ask you to vote aye.
Any discussion? The motion is the Senate do concur with Senate File 33, and you've been asked to vote aye. If the Chief Clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft excused. Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich. Escobel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Johnson, Kinski, Landon, Meyer.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 28 aye, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted and concurred with Joint Conference Committee report to Senate File 33, which is part of House Message Number 345. We're at that business of reading and signing of Enrolled Act. Enrolled Act Number 56.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 56 being original Senate File 1, an act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of state government.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 56, which is original Senate File Number 1, the budget. I've so signed. Ellen. Senate Enrolled Act Number 46.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 46 being original Senate File 101, an act relating to education.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 46, which is original Senate File 101. So signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 47.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 47 being original Senate File 44, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 47, which was original Senate File Number 44. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 48.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 48 being original Senate File 92, an act relating to workers' compensation.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 48 being original Senate File Number 92. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 49.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 49 being original Senate File 100, an act relating to the Controlled Substance Prescription Tracking Program.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 49 being original Senate File 100. So signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 50.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 50 being original Senate File 47, an act relating to cities and towns.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 50 being original Senate File Number 47. I so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 51.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 51 being original Senate File 16, an act relating to the Wyoming Controlled Substance Act.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 51 being original Senate File 16. I so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 52.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 52 being original Senate File 4, an act relating to agriculture.
I'm about ready to sign original Senate, I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 52 being original Senate File Number 4. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 53.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 53 being original Senate File 52, an act relating to elections.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Rolled Act number 53 being original Senate file 52. So sign Senate Rolled Act number 54.
Senate Enrolled Act number 55 being original Senate file 58, an act relating to the Wyoming retirement system.
Did I have two there? I should get both back. Which one?
I did.
54. Okay, thank you. I'm about ready to sign Senate Rolled Act number 55 being original Senate file number 58. So signed, Senate Enrolled Act 54.
Senate Enrolled Act number 54 being original Senate file 142, an act relating to fire protection.
I'm about ready to sign original Senate Act, or excuse me, I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 54 being original Act Senate file 142. So signed, House Enrolled Act 79.
House Enrolled Act number 75 being original House Bill 174, an act relating to nicotine products.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 79 being original House Bill 174. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 80.
House Enrolled Act number 80 being original House Bill 64, an act relating to the Uniform Commercial Code.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 80 being original House Bill 64. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 81.
House Enrolled Act number 81 being original House Bill 31, an act relating to public utilities.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 81 being original House Bill number 31. I've so signed. Do we have any more messages? Do we have a majority floor leader? We sure do. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, March 3rd, Tuesday.
Messages, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet almost immediately as soon as the House adjourns with its House counterparts over in the House committee room on joint interim topics. Mr. President, there was an announcement sent out of a meeting tomorrow noontime on that same subject, and that's plan B, and we'll use that only if we don't get done tonight.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Capital Rehabilitation and Restoration Oversight Group will be meeting tomorrow at 8 a.m. in room 302.
Senator Ross.
By the way, yes. By the way, I'd just like to thank the members of the Appropriations Committee on their hard work and getting this done, and appreciate all their support and help.
Hear, hear.
No, you the man.
Senator Ross, I have that like you announced that noon meeting on the conference, if you find that yellow note, Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Cole.
Mr. President, for members of the Senate Education Committee, we're still meeting tonight, as far as I know, to discuss interim topics over in the House Education.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number three, Revenue, will meet tomorrow, 1 p.m., for confirmation hearings to the Board of Equalization. We'll also have our picture taken, so dress your best. This is for the 2015 Hardest Working Committee in the Senate Award. So,
Senator Ross, it was on the Conference Committee for the Practice of Law Amendments. Senator Bebout, it's over on my desk on the left side. Senator Bebout. Well, actually, Senator Ross.
Yes, Mr. President, the Conference Committee on House Bill 214, Practice of Law Amendments, will be heard at noon tomorrow.
In the President's office.
In the President's office.
Thank you. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Management Council will meet today upon adjournment, waiting for the House. I'm not sure what the status of that is. In executive session in room 302.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
Absolutely.
Mr. President, earlier this morning I left the following letter on the governor's desk. Dear Governor Meade, please accept my resignation from the Wyoming Legislature, Senate District 2, Converse, and Platte Counties. I ask that my resignation be effective at the time of adjournment on the final day of this, the 63rd session. I'm thankful for having served under your able leadership, as well as that of Governor Friedenthal and Governor Geringer. I look favorably upon my 19 years in the Wyoming Legislature. I am proud to have served with an organization exemplified by both honor and distinction. My reason for resignation is family, my desire to be closer to my grandchildren as they grow up. I leave Wyoming looking back with many fond memories while looking forward to a fulfilling future. Sincerely, Senator Jim Anderson, Senate District 2. Thank you, Mr. President.
Anderson, you're going to be missed. The class that we came in is getting very small.
That's
been an enjoyable 19 years.
But just let me tell you, it's all good. It's all good.
Mr. President.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I privilege the floor?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to thank our Senator Anderson. I remember in the House, and I believe several members of here were in the House when Jim was first elected, and we saw a very strong-willed, dedicated individual that believed in Wyoming, loved Wyoming, fought for his issues, and you always knew where he stood. And he had that booming voice when he would debate, and it came from the heart. And I can remember, Mr. President, sitting up there where you are when I was over on the other side, and when Jim got up to speak, heads would turn and people would listen. because he had something to say. And the way he said it was in such a way that he could be against your bill, but if you defeated it, you didn't feel bad about it. And so, Jim, as a member of the Senate, former member of the House, and more importantly, a Wyoming citizen, God bless you and your family, and thank you so much, so very much for your service to our great state.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well said. Any other announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, March 3rd.